This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run! It's in trouble. He has dropped it. It is Lorenzo Alexander. Oh, baby, what a hit. Fire to the far sideline. It is picked off. It is intercepted. It is picked off. Stephon Gilmore.
He will come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo!
McCoy, punch to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Monday. Welcome to a new week of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. I am your host. This is the co-host. And we are here to talk with you about Bills football and talk with a couple of our guests over the next 3 hours. Hope you can join us on the telephone or via Twitter. Pretty good guest lineup. Dane Brugler is going to join us at the bottom of this hour. He's going to talk about the national championship game and which draft prospects to look at in the game tonight, Clemson and Alabama. That's coming up at 12:30. Our man Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, joins us at 1 o'clock today. And Greg Rosenthal will join us at 2 from NFL.com to review the wild card playoff games over the weekend. Not much to look at there. And to preview the upcoming games, the divisional round playoff games this week. In the meantime, the coaching search continues for the Buffalo Bills, and we want to talk with you about that as well, with a couple of new candidates being interviewed this weekend. Harold Goodwin, the Arizona Cardinals offensive coordinator, interviewed for the head coaching position on Saturday. Chris Richard, the defensive coordinator for the Seattle Seahawks, interviewed for the position on Sunday. So far, the Bills have interviewed four for the head coaching job, and we want to know from you via Twitter. With the four head coaching candidates interviewed so far, we don't know if there are any more, but who do you think is the best fit for the Buffalo Bills? Four interviewed so far. That's our Twitter poll. The Bills have interviewed four so far, more than 500 votes in. 39% of you go with, I guess, kind of the incumbent, Anthony Lynn, Bills offensive coordinator this past season. It's a tie. 28% say Panthers defensive coordinator Sean McDermott. 28% say Seattle defensive coordinator Chris Richard. 5%, only 5% say Arizona offensive coordinator Harold Goodwin. So that's what our Twitter poll looks like. Want to hear from you on the telephone or via Twitter. You know, who do you like of these four? Is that it? We don't know. There might be more interviews coming up this week. But, Donald, I have a feeling that this issue is going to be settled very soon, like a week, maybe 10 days, that we'll have a head coach. What do you think?
I hope so.
So do I. I do, too.
I mean, it's really time to get this thing wrapped up so that you can move on to now your prospects and what you need to bring in here, whether it's free agency or whether it's through the draft, both. We need to get the coach in here first. So first of all, we got to figure out what's going on with the quarterback. So that's why you need a coach, so we can get everything settled and we know what's going on with this team.
We need it to happen in the next week or 10 days, I think. A couple of Twitter respondents already. Free Range Buffalo says none of the above. I guess that's a viable choice. Will Henry tweets in, when are they interviewing Frank Reich? I don't know. I mean, I've seen that reported. I don't know that's going to happen, to be honest with you. I don't hear the rumblings in the building of Frank Reich being an interview target for the Buffalo Bills, right?
I haven't. Anybody that I've talked to, anybody we've talked to together, it doesn't seem like that's coming down the pipe. So yeah. I don't know. Maybe they'll surprise us.
VM Rose 716 says, none of the above. Kidnap Sean Payton. Campy Campbell tweets, and not the most impressive list, but here's to hoping one of them has their act together and really impress Doug and the Pegulas or Russ. Zach Polino, what difference does it make? Whaley, Russ, and the boys still there? Yes, they are. They're not going anywhere. It does make a difference who the head coach is. Sabres, Bills, Mets tweets in, who cares at this point? I care. Most Bills fans care. You care, right?
Yeah.
Scott Polichet, Lynn, there are players who want him as head coach and continuity for offense and organization. A lot of pluses. Kim Race tweets in, Richard seems to have his players motivated every week. That's what I'm looking for. You'd have to agree with that. I don't know much about Chris Richard. I know Pete Carroll's background is on the defensive side of the ball. But Chris Richard has a lot of admirers, Donald, the guy who has coordinated Seattle's defense. Obviously, they did a great job this past weekend. Interesting guy, young guy. You know, there was a quote from Pete Carroll. I want to read this to you. Pete Carroll on Chris Richard, quote, I think Chris is a remarkable coach. I've been with him since he was a player, so at USC, so I watched him truly – grow up as a coach. He was a graduate assistant for us at USC, then hired on here. He's an extraordinary coach because he relates so well. He's so smart. He's a brilliant guy. He handles schemes and adjustments and situations and players in extraordinary fashion, a very strong philosophy, very clear about what he wants to do. This is Pete Carroll on Chris Richard. He's tough. He's got a real toughness about him that makes him unique. Not just going to tap guys on the back and hope they do well. He's going to direct them, motivate them, relate to them. I think he's an amazing candidate for when the time comes, and I don't think it's too far off. That's pretty high praise from Pete Carroll.
That is pretty high praise, but I think that's exactly what you look for in a coach. You need a guy who can relate to the players, but a guy who's still tough. You know, we don't want you to come in here and be so much of a player's coach, and you relate to the players so much that you're not tough and you're not holding guys accountable, even though the players need to hold themselves accountable. I think the fact that he's young is a good thing because he can relate, but at the same time, he's saying that he's tough. So, I mean, for me, that's what you need. You know, you need that guy. He's a leader. Pete Carroll's giving him the high praise. I mean, high praise from a guy who's won a Super Bowl and won a lot of games in this league, that it can't get any better than that.
Yeah, and I think what we're looking at here, this list of four that the Bills have interviewed so far, I believe what we're looking at is almost like a new generation of coaches, Donald. You know who's absent? Frank Reich, obviously, we talked about him, absent from this list of Bills interviews so far. Also absent, Tom Coughlin, apparently not on the Bills list of potential interview candidates. What we're looking at is young guys, really.
Are we seeing a trend from the Adam Gase down in Miami type of thing? Where
maybe that's it.
You know, they want to get younger with the coaching staff?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to speak for the entire league. I mean, look, it looks like Jacksonville is going to hire Mike Smith. He's a retread coach, obviously a guy who had some success in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. Coughlin is interviewed. But from the Bills' standpoint anyway, when you look at the four interviews, they are younger guys with experience, which I think stands out to me. You know, Doug Whaley a week ago was reluctant to sort of characterize what he was looking for, the type of coach he was looking for. But based on the interviews, and this is truly a Doug Whaley-led search, based on the interviews, it's clear he's looking for a young guy with substantial experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, Richard would be the least experienced of the four with just 6 years, but he's been around the game for a while. I do think they're looking for a young guy, and I believe, Donald, and I wanted you to speak on this if you would. I believe it has something to do with relating well to today's players, to get a guy who is not that much older than today's players.
You have to understand that today's players are a lot different than the guys from early 2000s, guys from the 90s, 80s, and so on and so forth. These players are just a lot different. You have to understand where they're coming from. You have to be able to relate to them. A lot of these players are they feel like they're entitled to certain things, and so you have to have a coach that can talk to them and make them understand that you're not entitled to anything in this league, but at the same time, he can still relate to them. He can talk, because he's young, he can talk to them like a grown man. He can we're still around the same age bracket where I understand this coach. He understands me. He understands where I'm coming from. If you hire a guy like Tom Coughlin, he's been in the league forever. He's won Super Bowls and everything. Like, this coach doesn't know where I'm coming from right now. And you need that for these young players that are coming into this league. You need a guy that's young and relates to him.
Well, let's hear from you. The phone line's open, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Donald and I, happy to have you in the audience, whether you're listening on our flagship radio in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550, or watching and listening on MSG. We're here until 3 o'clock with the Bills coaching search front and center. Two more interviews over the weekend, four interviews in all. We want to know from you which of the four would be the best fit for the Bills head coaching job. Yes, there may be more interviews, and yes, your candidate might not be on that list of four. So give us a call. Let us know what you think about these four or about somebody that they might be missing, someone they're not talking to. 803-0550, the number, toll-free 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Thomas Smith tweets in, no McDaniels, no Matt Patricia, no Haley, no Schwartz, no Reich. Yeah, I mean, those are the usual suspects, and you're right, those names are missing for whatever reason. And this is a question that I can't wait when the process is done, maybe to get a sense from Doug Whaley about what he was looking for. Mm-hmm. And the Patriots coordinators, either side of the ball, not on the list. Haley from Pittsburgh, not on the list. Jim Schwartz, who had been here as defensive coordinator, not on the list. Frank Reich, which is not to say they might not be follow-up interviews or further interviews, but at least for the first four, none of those previously mentioned and those mentioned in the tweet by Thomas Smith are on the list. What do you think's going on there, Donald?
I just think that they want to go with a younger guy, you know, like you said, a guy that has experience but younger. I mean, we haven't heard any of those names linked to the Bills. So it's obvious that they want somebody younger. As of right now, they want somebody younger. but still has experience coaching, you know. And like you said, the guy from Seattle, he's like 6 years experience coaching in this league, but he started out as a graduate assistant. He's worked his way up from USC now to the NFL. So, I mean, I like the younger guys. I've been the one that said it from as soon as Rex was fired. Like, they need to get a younger guy in here who really knows how to relate to these players, because older guys don't. You know, they're stuck in their ways. They've been doing it for so long. And that could be something as well. You know, these older coaches really get stuck in their ways. They want to do things the way they want to do things. And maybe they just want a new guy to come in here and change everything, a breath of fresh air.
You know, McDermott is age 42. Anthony Lynn for the Bills, who's been here now, is age 48. Harold Goodwin is age 44. And Richard, the youngest of the group, is age 39. I believe that's how old Adam Gase is in Miami. And Harold Goodwin, who interviewed Saturday with the Bills, has been the offensive coordinator for the last 4 years with the Arizona Cardinals, running Bruce Arians' offense, clearly, and Bruce Arians calls the plays. But he's kind of an offensive line guy, which I like. I like the approach that offensive linemen take to the game. He's been 10 years with Bruce Arians. Before Arizona, he was with him in Pittsburgh. He's a run game guy, which obviously plays to the Buffalo strength, and is regarded as a pretty good developer of talent on the offensive line. So there's a lot to recommend. It also appears, when you look at the Bills' list of four, defense, offense, you know, it's two offense and two defense, right? Goodwin and Lynn on the offensive side of the ball, and Richard and McDermott on the defensive side of the ball. So it appears that that doesn't matter to Doug Whaley as he conducts this search.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
You've been around these coaching searches for a good amount of time
often.
Now. Yeah, too often. When they interview these coaches, is there ever a time where they bring them in with not the intention of hiring them as the head coach, but maybe as an offensive coordinator or defensive coordinator?
Yeah. That's how Greg Roman got the OC job here. You know, I think he interviewed for the head coaching job when they interviewed Rex, and they liked him so much that once Rex was hired, they went back and hired Greg Roman. Hmm. Yeah, so maybe that's going on. You're right. You think that's going on?
I think it can be.
Yeah, because you know, these guys, chances of all four of these winding up with head coaching jobs in the NFL, pretty remote.
Right.
And not just in Buffalo, but all four of them getting NFL jobs, I think is pretty remote. So, sure, I can see that happening. Yeah.
I think that could be one of the reasons that they're bringing these younger guys in, and they're all coordinators. I think that can be something. It could be something there.
And there's another interesting tweet from Gregory Vertebello. Anthony Lynn keeps continuity, sounds willing to work with Tyrod Taylor, fix defense, and we can make wild card. Look at half of the wild card quarterbacks. Well, yeah, although based on the wild card games this weekend, I'd like to aim higher. And I know that Doug Whaley is aiming higher than just making the wild card. But I agree with him on the Tyrod Taylor thing. It was an interesting short report coming out from Adam Schefter over the weekend about Tyrod Taylor. It came out yesterday morning. I'm paraphrasing. I don't have it in front of me. But basically he said that the Pegulas expressed remorse to Anthony Lynn about directing that Tyrod Taylor not play in the finale. Strange. I don't know what that's all about, or I don't know where that came from. I'm thinking, and immediately people jumped on it as a leak from inside the building. It seems to me that's probably a leak from an agent, maybe the agent for Anthony Lynn. You know, Schefter and these guys keep in close touch with agents. Maybe called up Anthony Lynn's agent and said, how did the interview go with Buffalo? It went fine. Interesting. They told him that they wished they hadn't directed that, or, you know, the football people hadn't directed that Tyrod be benched. So Schefter tweets it out, and there you have a storyline. But I'm not sure what that means. I don't know if it bodes well for Anthony Lynn getting the job here, or bodes ill for him getting the job here. Not sure what that's all about. I just found that pretty strange.
I mean, it's strange that something like that would come out, even that they would even – express that remorse. You know, it's done now, so it's really strange to me that would even, if that really happened, you know, like, why would they now go back and say, you know, we're sorry for benching them? That doesn't really make sense to me. So I don't know what to make of these leagues these days, man.
Yeah, I know. Maybe it means that they felt that by having Tyrod on the bench in the Jets game, they damaged Anthony Lynn's chances elsewhere around the league. And that
can be true.
And the agent wants to get that out there to show that, hey, he was a victim, basically, and he didn't go in with his quarterback. I don't know. Again, I don't know what that all means. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The coaching search continues here at One Bills Drive. We are going to talk about the wild card games as well, and we want to hear from you. And let's go to Gary in Hamburg to start. Hi, Gary, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking the call. I'm a little disturbed that I'm not hearing Frank Reich's name come up a little bit more in the conversation. Love to have him come to Buffalo. He'd bring a winning attitude, a winning culture, and he's a great guy.
He's a wonderful guy. Where do you get winning attitude, winning culture from, though?
Because I'm old enough to remember when he played for us.
Yeah, I remember that, too. Is Frank getting any action anywhere? Is he getting any job interviews anywhere? I don't think so. I haven't seen his name linked to any jobs, Frank Reich. Love Frank Reich. Wonderful guy. But, I, you know, for whatever reason, he is not getting job interviews, I don't think. I'm looking on my list, my as complete as these lists can be, NFL list of interviews, and Frank is not on it. I don't think he's had any interest from anybody, which, you know, what does it tell you? I don't know. Maybe people don't like the job he did in Philadelphia. You know, he's been around the Colts when they were winning, but, you know, had issues in the Chargers. They weren't a consistent winning team, and the Eagles weren't real good this year either, although he worked with a rookie quarterback. So I don't know. I don't know why Frank Reich isn't getting more love. Donald?
I don't know. Does he want it?
I don't know. I mean, in the past he said he would, and I'm sure he would, but he's not on anybody's list. Yeah, Robert, Tucson, go ahead.
How old is Frank?
Probably almost 50.
Almost 50?
Yeah.
I mean, when a guy's done something in the past, you know, it can I never know why they go after certain people over others. You know, like right now we're talking about Doug and he's going after all of these younger guys instead of going after older guys. And like you never know what's the thought process. And like you said, after they hire the coach, then we'll get a, you know, why Doug went after this group of guys instead of the big name people. You really never know. Like, I don't know why he's not getting any love out there from anybody, but maybe what he's done in the past, they just don't like.
Frank is 55, as a matter of fact. Robert in Tucson, Arizona. Hello, Robert. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm curious if you guys could talk about maybe your thoughts on, are the Pegulas potentially putting more of the coaching search on Doug Whaley so that he can have more responsibility going forward? So in case there are issues, it can be, you know, his on him and maybe hold responsibility to him.
Are you saying the Pegulas giving him responsibility so they can fire him down the road?
Not necessarily fire him, but it seems like I know in his press conference he talked about that he did have a say in the last, you know, hiring Rich Ryan.
Right.
But that wasn't who he put forward, but he did agree to it. So it almost seems like he's trying to kind of put a walk away from it and the fact that it wasn't his fault. And I know that, you know, some other GMs have been fired when they fired the coach. I know I'm not necessarily a huge fan. I think he's missed out on some draft choices, and I don't think he's been a stellar GM. I know he does a pretty good job, but I think he could do better.
Robert, I think, and this came out right the day Rex Ryan was let go. Later that day, the announcement came that Doug Whaley would lead the search, and clearly that's what's happening here. Doug Whaley is leading the search, and I think he's going to identify the head coach that he thinks will be the best fit for the Bills and present it to the Pegulas. I know they're involved with some of these interviews as well, but Whaley's in charge of this coaching search. There's no, for whatever reason, I think it's an effort to employ Doug Whaley's football expertise in this regard mostly. I don't think it's I hear what you're saying. You're not necessarily saying that, but Whaley's in charge of the search. It's clear that he's made these first four interviews, put together the list of what he's looking for, and I think he's ready to do that and let the chips fall where they may. Donald, anything to add?
You're right. Like, Whaley's in charge of this thing, and I said it last week. You know, I truly believe that Whaley's in charge of the search, and he's also in charge of bringing the talent on this team. So, you know, his career really goes with everything, every decision that he's making right now. So mm-hmm. I definitely don't want to be in his position right now.
Why?
Because it's – I mean, I'm sure he knows that. You know, he knows – and everybody. And when you're working in this league – you know that if you make wrong decisions or you're not playing good on the field or something like that, you're not coaching well, that you're going to be fired. But right now, I truly believe that his career is all on this decision, who he brings in at head coach and the talent that he you know, brings to this team.
One thing I admire about Doug Whaley and his tenure as general manager is he's not afraid to take risks, mm-hmm. and he has tremendous confidence in his decision-making. We've seen that with the draft picks. We've seen that with the trades he's made. And he knows the consequences and knows that if it doesn't work out, that he'll be held accountable. I think he's always been that way prior to this coaching search and now, especially the coaching search.
Even look at this coaching search, this search right now. We've heard, why don't we have Frank Reich in here? Why don't we have Tom Coughlin in here? We've heard so many names.
Why don't we have the Patriots coordinators?
Yeah, the Patriots coordinators. And he's like, no, this is the group.
This is his list.
This is who I'm interviewing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to hire who I hire.
Yeah, which I kind of admire that about him. Greg in Hamburg. Hello, Greg. Welcome.
Hey, John and Donald. How are you guys doing?
Okay.
All right. Yeah, I guess what Donald just said kind of squashes a little bit what I was going to talk about. But
my bad.
I was just thinking, what if they brought in Tom Coughlin if he's going to be interviewed? I know this isn't speaking of the guys that have been interviewed here, but what if they were to bring him in at least for a few years and then bring up an Anthony Lynn or McDermott under him as an assistant coach and rear him for his successor, something along those lines? Because the Bills fans, I mean, myself and what I'm sure you guys do, are just completely exhausted. And we need winners in here now. If you and I hate to refer to the Patriots, but they've been doing something right for the last 20 years.
Yeah, they've been lining up Tom Brady at quarterback. That's the biggest thing they've done right.
That's exactly what they've done.
I don't look, Coughlin, I'm not ruling him out, but he's not on the initial list of interviewees. They could have interviewed him over this past week if they were interested. It doesn't appear that they're interested. I think, again, we're kind of reading tea leaves here, Greg. I think it appears that Doug Whaley's looking for a younger coach. I went through the list, 48, mm-hmm. range of 39 to 48 years old in the first four interviews. He's looking for a younger coach, someone that can relate to players maybe. I don't know that 70-year-old Tom Coughlin would be able to do that. And Coughlin's last few years of the Giants were not great.
Right.
So I don't know. Young Certainly blood. A candidate, a guy I'm sure
Bring
they some gave some here. Thought to. Yeah.
Bring some young blood in here. I mean, like, I understand the big names and people that have won games, won Super Bowls in this league, that doesn't mean that these young guys can't get the job done. It doesn't mean that they don't have the winning attitude and everything. I think they still can. These guys are on good teams. You know, you look at McDermott, he's down in Carolina. He was in the Super Bowl last year. You look at Harold Goodwin. I mean, that team was, what, in the AFC Championship? NFC Championship.
Last year.
The guy from Seattle, he's still in the playoffs right now, you know, and put together one of the best defenses, if not, you know, one of the best defenses probably in the history of the league. When you're talking about a 5, 6, 7 year span, I mean, this defense has really been getting it done for a good amount of time now. So I think these guys have winning attitudes. They have the winning mindset, and they're young. They know how to relate to the players. So get some young blood in here and let those guys go to work.
Here is Mike in Buffalo. Welcome, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi, how's it going, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So my thoughts are, you know, how much of this do you think is, you know, interviewing these four coaching candidates right now is more just for a show? Because, you know, last year going to get a new – or, I'm sorry, 2 years ago when we went and got Rex Ryan, we were the first team to get a head coach. We got, you know, the Bagulas wanted to make a splash, I feel like, getting a big-name guy in here, and it ended up not turning out the way they wanted it to. So how much of it do you think is they're just waiting maybe for a guy that – be let go from one of the teams in the playoffs after they fall out, or, you know, when that's over with? Or it's just they're taking their time because they don't want to make themselves look like butts again?
I think it's a honest, good faith effort to find a head coach. They had a chance to talk to playoff team coaches. I mean, they waited until yesterday to talk to Chris Richard in Seattle. Mm-hmm. The New England coordinators, at least McDaniels, did some interviews over the weekend. I believe he did three of them over the weekend. So they had their opportunity to talk to teams still in the playoffs. No, I don't think it's a show of anything. I think it's a good faith effort to find a head coach. One thing that's interesting about this year's entire pool of coaches, Donald, is that there are no huge names. You know, there's no big fish out there.
You mean the entire pool of
league-wide.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. There's not those big names. You're seeing these guys, these younger guys. You don't see that big name. And even the big names that everybody's throwing out there, only really Tom Coughlin is the one that's done an interview. Mm-hmm. Everybody else is just throwing darts at a board.
Yeah.
You know?
Here is Jim in Rochester. Hello, Jim. Welcome.
It's Jim.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no worries. I got two names for you. I want to see if you think these are desirable at all, but what about Mike Vrabel in Houston? And what about Jim Bob Cooter in Detroit? Just two fresh blood names that could really inject some life into Buffalo.
Like them both. Vrabel, I was reading about him today.
I think
the Rams are going to coach him.
Yeah, I was.
Interview him, right?
Yep, I was reading about that. and then, you know, I heard something about Jim Bob Cooter.
Well, Tasker's talked about him for months now.
Vrabel?
No, Cooter.
Oh, yeah. Tasker has talked about him and said he thinks he can be a great coach. I was talking to someone, I can't remember, a couple weeks ago about Jim Bob Cooter, and they were saying that he might not get a head coaching job because of his name, because his name is Jim Bob Cooter. I mean, when you think of it, that's terrible. It is crazy.
Tasker has talked about Jim Bob Cooter in Detroit a lot over the last month or two as an up-and-coming star in the coaching ranks, and that got my attention. And Vrabel, always admired him as a player, had a short coaching stint at Ohio State, and now he's been with the Texans, seems to do a pretty good job with a pretty talented group. And the Rams are going to talk to him. So, those are names to watch. I would keep an eye on those two. Chris in Syracuse. Hello, Chris. Welcome.
How are you, sir?
Great, sir.
Well, I just thought I'd chime in. I really don't have a standout favorite. What I think is worth noting, though, is that, I highly feel that the reason they're not taking one of these big-name coaches is because you already know what they are. You know, they're not coaching as a head coach now for a reason. And I don't think that they're looking at the problems and the mishaps that those coaches may or may not have had while they were coaching. And, they're thinking, maybe we want someone new to see what they can do. So the way I kind of look at it is, what do we know about the four guys that they've already interviewed? I mean, first of all, we know what Allen is. I mean, he, out until this year, he's never been a coordinator. He was taken from offensive line coach and thrown into the OC position when the offense wasn't doing anything after game two, and he took him right back to a number one leading rushing team. What we don't know about him is what his playbook's going to look like. I mean, he modified an existing playbook that, existed this year and last year to make it work for what he thought the team could do. Now, it could be good, but again, you really don't know what that playbook's going to look like going into next year. You hope that he knows enough about the players to modify his own ideals to fit the team better than someone coming in. But what you do know about the guys, that the other three that they have interviewed, is who they are, what they are, and what they've done. I mean, you know what their playbooks look like. You know who they're going to choose in drafts, who they're going to pick up in free agency, and you just don't know that about A-Lynn. So I guess the way I look at it is, at least we know what we've got with A-Lynn, and I think that kind of bodes well for him. That and the fact that, there's a lot of players that really speak very, very highly of him. But then again, I was never a big Rex fan, and I was very disappointed when they picked him up. And we all know what they say about Rex, and we see how well that panned out.
Yeah, what do you think, Donald?
I mean, I don't know.
If your argument is that the Bills know more about Anthony Lynn than anybody else, Chris, yeah, that's true. And I think that's a good thing. They have inside information on Anthony Lynn. And I guess I would dispute that you don't know what his offense is going to look like. I think based on what he's done, they probably have a pretty good sense of the changes he would make offensively. I mean, he's talked a lot about, the offense he prefers. And I think they probably have a pretty good feel for what Anthony Lynn might do on offense.
Now, the offense that he prefers to run might not be exactly the same, but if you have a number one rushing team in the league in the top 10 scoring, like how much do you really change if he's the head coach? How much can you change from that offense?
Well, I think they certainly got to do something with the
passing game.
The passing game,
You definitely have to improve in the passing game, but how much different should that offense look, especially the running game? Like, you can't change too much to that running game because that's their bread and butter right now.
The running game is LeSean McCoy and a little dose of Mike Gillisley and probably Jerome Felton, too, I would think.
Yeah, but I don't know what his offense would look like. His preferred style of running game, he might say, we want to go, zone blocking. We don't want to go just pulling everybody. We want to now zone block, stretch, and all types of different run plays. Like, you got to stick to what, and not necessarily stick to what you did good this year, but those guys love, Richie Incognito and Miller, they love to pull and get out there in the run game. Now, if you change it, you could be talking about a totally different offense next year and a totally different run game that might not work out the same way.
Anthony Lynn, so far, according to NFL Network, has had interviews with five teams, the Bills, the 49ers, the Rams, the Jaguars, and the Chargers. Peter King wrote about this morning, and just read you one paragraph. Peter King from MMQB wrote, quote, "I'm hearing the Bills and Rams were feeling good about the prospects of Buffalo interim coach Anthony Lynn, organized and a commanding presence. I heard from one club official after his interview," he didn't say which team. And then he went on to say, Peter King said, "Lynn's best chance might be if Bill O'Brien stays in Houston and Buffalo ownership gives a shot to a coach universally liked and respected in the building. those are the strengths, I believe, that Anthony Lynn has. Universally liked and respected in the building here. Strong and commanding presence, according to one club official, unnamed club official, cited by Peter King. And if you think about what Bills players were saying, you know, two of them most notably after the season when they talked about Anthony Lynn has command of the room, I think that that is coming across in some of these interviews. And certainly that would serve him well in these interviews.
Everything that I've heard from all four of these candidates, including Anthony Lynn, is that they really command the room, even at just the offensive and defensive coordinator positions that they're at right now. But here, Anthony Lynn really has the respect of everybody in the building, but the players as well. You know, the players really respect him, even the guys on the defensive side of the ball that really only got to deal with him one game. You know, they talked about Kyle came in here, he talked about it. Lorenzo came in here, he talked about how, you know, things were a little bit different in 1 week, you know. So they have that respect for him, and it also brings back that continuity. You need that.
All right, we're going to break, and we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about tonight's national championship college football game with Dane Brugler, some of the NFL prospects to watch for in tonight's game, Clemson versus Alabama. That's coming up next. We will resume the coach talk. A lot more to talk about, including the wild card playoff games over the weekend and what lies ahead. So stick around. We got a lot of ground to cover today. John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones live from our One Buffalo studio. We're talking about the Bills coaching search today, and reconvene that discussion in a couple of moments. But the big football game on tonight is the national championship game, Clemson, Alabama, 8 o'clock from Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, a game that's loaded with NFL draft prospects. Joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, the senior NFL draft analyst for NFL Draft Scout and CBSSports.com. Really happy to have Dane Brugler with us. Dane, thank you very much. It's John Murphy and Donald Jones. We appreciate you spending a few minutes with us today.
Well, good afternoon, guys.
This guy is not in the game tonight, but he has made news already today. Mitch Trubisky, North Carolina quarterback. What do you think of his decision, and where does that put him in the draft, do you think?
Yeah, Mitch Trubisky from North Carolina was kind of the main underclassman that we've been waiting on, who has yet to make a decision. Really an interesting test case because he has only one season of starting experience for the Tar Heels. But he was so good this past year, really showed that NFL skill set. He received a first-round grade from the advisory committee. And so when it came down to it, yes, he only has that 1 year of starting experience. But with the way this quarterback class is shaping up, you know, for Trubisky, he couldn't pass up the opportunity. I think going into the process, he is the favorite to be the first quarterback drafted. And when you look at the top 10 picks this year, you have the Browns at 1, the Niners at 2, the Bears at 3, the Jets. There's plenty of teams that need a quarterback, a new face of the franchise, and Mitch Trubisky might be that guy this year. So we'll be having a lot of talks going forward about Trubisky and where he might fit in this draft.
Now, Dane, I'm sitting here looking at, I guess, your most recent mock draft, and you have three quarterbacks in the top 10. And and surprisingly, you have DeShone Kizer over DeShone Watson. So is this a draft where – because we've heard so much about this quarterback class not being that strong. So is this a draft where teams are just reaching because they desperately need quarterbacks?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the quarterbacks are always, you know, the variable of the first round, especially early in the first round. And you can go back in past years where we've seen quarterbacks be overdrafted. You know, Jake Locker, top 10, Blaine Gabbert, Christian Ponder. You know, quarterback desperation in the NFL, as you guys know, is such a fascinating thing. And in the draft, these prospects, they signal hope. And, you know, if a team falls in love with one of these guys, they're going to go high. I mean, last year, Jared Goff and Carson Wentz were not the two best players in the draft, but they went 1 and 2. And this year, with guys like Mitch Trubisky, DeShone Kizer, DeShone Watson, I don't think anyone would argue that they're the top three players in this draft, or maybe even three players that should go top 5, top 10. But when you have all these quarterback needy teams picking in the top 10, it certainly creates the discussion that maybe it's a fit. And these teams will be doing all the due diligence on these players. And DeShone Watson, you know, is the only one of these players that that we're talking about, these quarterbacks, that still has a game to play, a big test for him tonight against an Alabama defense.
Now, do you think that he can, you know, right now you have him at number six going to the Jets. Can he improve and jump Trubisky if he has a great game tonight?
I don't think anything tonight will necessarily change that. You know, Watson, he's a three-year starter at Clemson. We know what he's done. You know, he's been a runner-up for the Heisman the last 2 years. I think the biggest thing going for Watson is his ability late in games. You know, he's a winner. What he did last year against Alabama, 400 yards passing, four touchdowns. For most of Alabama's opponents, there's an intimidation factor. You know, before they get off the bus, they're already thinking about the daunting task of having to face that Nick Saban-led defense and everything that comes with it. But for Clemson, and specifically Watson, that's not going to be the case this year because they know they have the talent to match up. And so, you know, looking at this Alabama defense, one of the best defenses we've seen in the last few years, if Watson's able to, you know, go out there, you know, put up 30-plus points, you know, limit the mistakes, which has been an issue with him this year. He's thrown 17 interceptions. If he's able to do that and lead Clemson to a victory, there's no question it will help him. Now, will it be enough to convince a team to use a top-five pick on him ahead of talents like Kizer and Trubisky? You know, that's something that we'll have to wait and see. But Watson definitely has an opportunity tonight to, you know, certainly help himself in the eyes of NFL teams.
Wow, you really set the bar high there, Dane, putting 30 points or more up against Alabama's defense. Can anybody do that? Anybody?
Well, he did. He put up 40 points against them last year. And so you look earlier this year against Ole Miss, Chad Kelly and that offense put up 40-plus points. And I think that's really what it's going to take for Clemson to come out with a victory tonight. Clemson defense was outstanding against Ohio State. They pitched the shutout. But against Alabama, I think it's going to be a little bit of a different story. I think we're going to be looking at maybe like a 28-24 type of game. And if Clemson's able to get into the 30-point range, I think that's where you know, Watson can really help himself.
Dane Brugler, our guest, senior NFL draft analyst for CBSSports.com and NFL Draft Scout. I read somebody offered an opinion today, Dane, that there are no less than 8 or 10 players in this game tonight who could be first-round talent. Do you see it that way also?
Yeah, you look at it, and I mean, there's a reason these two teams are looked at as probably the two most talented in the nation, and you know they deserve a spot in a national title game. I mean, you look just at Alabama, you know, starting on that defense of Jonathan Allen, a player who will be in consideration for the number one overall pick, whether he's lined up inside or outside, his quickness, his power, his versatility, his intelligence. I mean, Nick Saban really points to Allen's football smarts as his greatest gift, but then you also see his physical gifts, and that's why he's being viewed as a top three talent in this draft. Sticking with that defense, you have guys like Tim Williams, the pass rusher, coming off the edge, a guy that can really put heat on the pocket. In the secondary with Marlon Humphrey, a big physical corner, and then at middle linebacker, Reuben Foster, went over 100 tackles this year. He's such a violent player. He looks for those collisions, and he plays very, very fast, limits the mistakes. Those players right there are looked at as top 20 picks. Then you look at Clemson, the top player on their offense is probably Mike Williams, the wide receiver, a guy who's built really well for the position. He's fast, has the body control that you want. He'll remind you a little bit of A.J. Green with some of these catches that he makes, but he's even a little bit more physical than that. So there's a lot of talent on this field tonight. NFL teams will definitely be tuning into this one.
Now, when you look at Mike Williams and you look at Marlon Humphrey, is that the matchup that – is Marlon Humphrey going to follow him all across the field all night?
Probably not. I think Alabama believes in Nick Saban. He believes in his corners that I don't think we'll necessarily see Humphrey follow Williams. But – you know, I think when they do match up, it's something that, you know, we'll definitely be paying attention to because Humphrey's one of the few guys that can actually match up physically with what Williams brings to the field. Humphrey is that tall, long corner, physical. But if there is one aspect of the Alabama defense that shows some vulnerability, it's the secondary. And Humphrey, he can be beat deep. He'll bite on those underneath fakes, and he can get you know, thrown over the top. And that's something that Washington did. The only touchdown they scored against Alabama was a missed assignment by Humphrey. So Whoever's lined up against Mike Williams have a tough task, and especially when it's Humphrey, it'll be something to watch.
I want to take you back then to Reuben Foster, the linebacker, and some have described him as maybe just a little bit better than the Bills' second round of this last year, Reggie Ragland. How does he compare to Ragland? Is he the same type of player? Is he a little more athletic than Reggie Ragland?
I think he's a little more athletic. He's really the complete package at linebacker. He's a power athlete. He has the range that you want, the instincts, a true predator mentality. And so, you know, I think this Alabama defense, I mean, they're stocked with top-tier talent. But Foster, he's really the lead singer of that band. He's the one making all the calls and, you know, making most of the plays. So, you know, Reggie Ragland was a fantastic, you know, player last year for Alabama and a very good prospect. You know, a player I didn't think would last as long as he did. Foster is a little bit better. He's a better prospect than Ragland was a year ago. And I don't think we're going to see Foster fall out of the top 15 picks this year.
You know, I think this game tonight is interesting because over the last few years, the Bills have, like, direct pipelines to Alabama and Clemson. It's like every draft in the top few picks, they're taking somebody from Alabama and Clemson, you know. So, but to take you outside of this game, I want to look at – I'm looking at your mock draft, and you have a guy by the name of Solomon Thomas, a D lineman from Stanford, going to the Bills. So can you tell us a little bit about him?
Yeah, very, very talented defensive lineman. Redshirt sophomore who declared early. This is a guy who understands how to use his hands, and he's so powerful with his upper body that he knows how to use different techniques to get blockers off balance. And then he uses his lateral explosiveness to sidestep blocks, to shoot gaps. He really springs out of his stance. And so, you know, watching him against Notre Dame, watching his tape in the bowl game against North Carolina, he was just a one-man wrecking crew. I mean, no one could block him. He understands how to just change his rush, mid-rush. He can counter what blockers are trying to do to stop him. It's not by accident that he's frequently in the right place at the right time, constantly in the backfield. I think Solomon Thomas is a guy who, if he falls to the Bills, that's a no-brainer pick to me. The bigger question in my mind is, will he last that long? I think he's a true top 10 player in this draft.
Hey, Dane, thank you for this. You've managed to enhance our enjoyment of what's, I'm sure, going to be a pretty good game tonight. We thank you for spending a few minutes with us.
Anytime. Thank you, guys.
Dane Brugler is the senior NFL draft analyst for CBSSports.com and NFL Draft Scout. Talking about tonight's game, 8 o'clock on ESPN, Alabama and Clemson for the national championship. A lot of prospects. Yeah.
A lot of talent.
Eight or ten first-rounders in tonight's game.
And that's, I mean, it's 8 or 10 first-rounders that have come out this year. And then you look at the guys that are coming out next year, it's probably another 8 or 10 of those guys.
Yeah. All right, we're going to talk more about Bills coaching candidates, and we'll take more of your phone calls in a moment. John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Donald Jones from One Bills Drive, and good conversation with Dane Brugler. Slowly, I'm getting excited about the draft. I mean, a top 10 pick. You wish you weren't there, but that's a premium pick.
You definitely wish you weren't there, but it's like you said, it's a premium pick. There's a lot of guys playing tonight, so I'm excited about watching the game tonight just to see, you know, who's out there. Who could be a sleeper pick? You know, who could be that guy who – he has a bunch of guys that are in the first round but not in the top 10, but a guy that can really, like, just ball out tonight and jump, you know, over the next couple of months to that top 10 pick and possibly into the hands of the Bills. It's exciting stuff, you know. Senior Bowl is coming up.
Yeah, a couple
so
weeks
be
away.
Watching that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's Rick in Batavia. Hello, Rick. Welcome. Hello, Rick in Batavia. Are you there?
Yes, John. How about you?
Good. Thank you.
I said you're expected for tonight's football game.
I'm sorry, what?
Say that one more time.
You expected between Alabama and Clemson?
Yeah.
It's going to be the new offensive coordinator for Alabama.
Who is that?
Is it Sarkisian?
Not Lane Kiffin. He took another job.
Steve Sarkisian is OC tonight, right?
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to hurt Alabama or not?
Do I think what?
Do you think it's going to hurt Alabama?
No, I don't. Do you, Donald?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he's been there all year. You know, it's not like – and I'm pretty sure he's called plays in the past, you know, before Lane Kiffin even got there. I'm not sure about that. Don't quote me on that. But he's been there all year with that offense. He knows what they like to run. I think they'll be fine.
Here's a call from Randy in Denver, Colorado. Go ahead, Randy.
Defense, anyway.
Yeah.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Hey, I guess out of the candidates they got up there, I would go with A. Lynn. But before I forget, I heard a thing on a national show. You know, there was rumors that Bill O'Brien in Houston was unhappy, and that, you know, I know the owner gave him the proverbial vote of confidence and that he wants him. But I heard a national show today say that if they, when they lose to New England, that O'Brien is going to try to force his way out. He absolutely does not get along with Rick Smith, the GM, and he's still upset about them bringing in Brock Osweiler without even consulting him. And Terry Pegula, a few years back, gave him $1.3 million of his money to keep him at Penn State to increase his salary to keep him at Penn State when he took over that program when it was a big mess. So that would be an intriguing candidate if that came open. I would like that. But my thing on Lynn, I think if they go with the unproven, I think Anthony Lynn is best. You know, he did well with our offense, and if he brings in Gus Bradley with an attacking style of defense, I think that fits our style. And one other thing, I think A. Lynn wants Tyrod Taylor, and I have a sneaking suspicion that Doug Whaley wants him out at all costs because that wasn't his guy. He likes the big, you know, measurables in his quarterbacks. And you have that guy on that said that Tyrod Taylor wouldn't be a huge, huge salary hit if, say, he had a good season next year and then fell off in season two. If they benched him, he said after the second season it would only be like Ryan Fitzpatrick type dead money. So mm-hmm. I think that's something we could live with, and we need to keep Tyrod too. So,
hey, Randy, before we let you go, and we're up against it on the clock, what about Bill O'Brien do you find intriguing? Why would you like him?
Well, I think he's done a good job in Houston. I mean, he's never even had a quarterback as good as Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah.
So I know they're, you know, I know you're not a big fan of Houston, but they have I think he'd bring in a good defensive coordinator with him, and I think he's a smart play caller. I think that he's done well with what he's been given down there. You know, really, I know it's not glamorous, but look what he's been working with at the quarterback in 3 years. I mean, it's just been horrible.
Yeah. I'm not a big Bill O'Brien fan, but yeah, the Penn State connection is worth considering. No question about that.
Yeah, you're connecting some dots there.
But, yeah.
you know, I think you got to wait and see how this thing plays out this week. Obviously, we all think that they're going to lose to New England. But you just got to see if he tries to force his way out of that job.
All right, we're going to break. Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, going to join us after the top of the hour, and more of your phone calls are welcome as we discuss the Bills coaching candidates, maybe a little wild card playoff talk as well. Donald Jones and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive. The coaching search ongoing with a couple of interviews over the weekend by the Buffalo Bills. On Saturday, they interviewed Arizona offensive coordinator Harold Goodwin, who has been with Bruce Arians for the last 10 seasons. Yesterday, they interviewed Seattle defensive coordinator Chris Richard, who's coached under Pete Carroll for his entire career, both at Seattle and at USC. No word on if any more interviews are scheduled for the Buffalo Bills. They have interviewed four so far. The New England Patriots are the biggest playoff favorites since 1998. They opened as 14.5 favorites against the Texans in this coming Saturday's divisional playoff game at Gillette Stadium. The line quickly grew to New England minus 16 after it was posted, making it one of the four largest playoff point spreads in the last 40 seasons. Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger appeared in a walking boot on his right foot after Sunday's victory over the Dolphins in the AFC wildcard game. Roethlisberger says he doesn't know the extent of the injury or the nature, but he says he will not miss time. The Steelers played the Kansas City Chiefs in Sunday's divisional round. Steelers outside linebackers coach Joey Porter was arrested last night outside a Pittsburgh bar hours after their win over the Dolphins. Security guards at the flats on Carson summoned a police officer who said an unruly customer was assaulting the doorman. Porter was taken to jail, charged with aggravated assault, simple assault, resisting arrest, public drunkenness, and disorderly conduct. Nick Saban in Alabama on the verge of college football history. The top-ranked Crimson Tide go up against Clemson tonight, 8 o'clock in the national championship game. A victory would give Alabama 5 national championships in 8 seasons. North Carolina quarterback Mitch Trubisky announced today that he will forego his senior season and enter the NFL draft. He is the number one rated draft eligible quarterback on Mel Kiper's list. And the Buffalo Sabres are home tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, KeyBank Center against Philadelphia. Buffalo stormed back in the third period Saturday to beat the Winnipeg Jets 4-3. Buffalo scored three times in the third period to earn the much-needed 3 points. And that is a sports update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones. And joining us in studio for the next several minutes is our Bills insider from BuffaloBills.com, Chris Brown, a usual Monday visitor for us. And, Chris, we're happy this tradition continues even in the offseason.
It's a tradition now.
It's a tradition unlike any other.
Well, okay, Mr. Nance. Sure.
Great to have you here. And there's a lot going on, even though a lot of it is under the surface and a lot of it deals with stuff that's not going on here in One Bills Drive. But quite frankly, the future of the franchise hangs in the balance with this coaching decision, and the Bills have been pretty methodical about their interviews over the last week, haven't they?
Yeah, busy weekend for them, especially, getting out west, to talk to Chris Richard in Seattle. You know, when you have coaches that you're interested in who are still in the playoff picture, and Richard certainly is after Seattle's win over Detroit, you got to go to them if you want to talk to them, and because he's going to be right back at work today getting ready for their next playoff opponent. So, cross-country flight, get in, get out, get what you need, and then, I get the sense that today is kind of a regroup day.
Yeah.
For the powers that be.
Do you get a sense of what kind of timetable we're looking at here? Are there more interviews to come?
Not really. Again, it's a regroup day, so there might be future plans laid out through the course of the day today, whether they feel they need to talk to anybody else, whether they're happy with the four candidates they feel they have to choose from. Obviously, there's competition for a couple of those, most notably Anthony Lynn, who's on his way to talk to the Chargers today. So, you can slice it any way you want. Do you strike while the iron's hot, make the offer first, be the first team in line to make sure you get the person that you want, make your contingency plans? There's a lot of different ways you can slice this. I don't know if there's any best way per se, because I think we've seen teams wait and get the right guy, and I think we've seen teams act quickly and get the right guy. So I don't think there's any right or wrong answer here in terms of how it unfolds.
Brownie, when you look at the four coaches that they have on the list, they all are young coaches in this league. Now, they have some experience in coaching, but they're young guys. What do you think that is? How come you don't see any of the big-name coaches on the list of interviews, at least?
I think some of this, and I'm just guessing here, but I think some of this might speak to the relationship that they want structurally between the GM and the head coach. I think Doug Whaley is looking for someone that he believes will be in lockstep with him in terms of starting a new chapter for this franchise. And I think that starts with a young, vibrant head coach. Might be an unproven head coach based on the people that we've seen who are in the candidate pool so far. But I think that also brings a new level of energy and excitement potentially to a franchise that some would argue probably needs it.
Mm-hmm. Chris Brown joins us, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. And Chris is keeping up with the Bills coaching search on our website, Bills 2017 coaching candidates. I like the way you're doing it, too. Once they're confirmed as interviewed, you kind of update it and stack them on top of each other.
Yeah,
it's a pretty comprehensive list of who the Bills
put
are
the new guy at the top of the list, and we're just kind of giving people, the fast food drive through rundown on each of these guys. So if you're just out and about on your phone and you get the text alert, from BuffaloBills.com that a new person has been confirmed as a candidate, you can just pull that coaching candidate list up, and we've got all the important details on there, along with, a short little book on the guy, when he interviewed, his age, coaching philosophy, background, that kind of stuff. But it's bite-sized type stuff that you can, scroll through in about 30 seconds.
Chris is with us. If you'd like to join us, phone lines open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Hey, Chris, you mentioned a minute ago about the Bills search. They go in, they get out, they do their interview. I was reading about Peter King wrote about Josh McDaniels' coaching interviews over the weekend, when basically he interviewed for three jobs in one day up in Foxborough, which he had to do. I mean, they're still playing.
Right.
And I was thinking, how much information is a four-hour sit-down with Josh McDaniels going to give you? What do you come away from with that? And what do the Bills come away from, even if it's a 7 or 8 hour interview with Chris Richard out in Seattle? What are you looking for? Just, we got to talk more to this guy? We like what we heard? Or can you make a definitive decision based on a day interview, a 7 or 8 hour interview?
I don't know that you really have a choice. I mean, I suppose you can always bring that person in for a second interview, which we've seen in the past. There are some teams that have done that. Bring a guy in for a second go-round and really nail everything down to make sure that's your guy. But with the time constraints what they are, especially for coaches in the playoffs, I don't know that you really have a choice. So you've got to make your hay right there when you have him face-to-face for that one sit-down and really get all the bases covered in terms of the answers that you're looking for. I think you're just looking for overall philosophy, potential coaching staff hires that the guy would bring with him if he is, in fact, the head coach. You know, personnel decisions obviously would be discussed and come into play in terms of the type of players he'd be looking at for specific positions, what he thinks of the roster as it currently exists. I mean, these are all answers that you need from the coaching candidate. And, you know, I think you also, in a face-to-face meeting, can get a vibe for the type of personality this guy's going to have as a coach. How is this guy going to be in the room with all these players on my roster? I want to know. I want to know how this guy is going to interact with people, not just players. So I think you can get that in an interview setting. And, you know, if the coach wants the job, I would like to think that he's going to show you exactly who he is.
Now, just to get back to the youth of the coaches on the list right now, do you think that it has anything to do with they might want a coach that can relate to players that's a little bit young and still in that age bracket with the players?
Yeah, I definitely think that's a factor here. I think it's also interesting that you have guys that have played at the very least at the college level, you know, in Harold Goodwin and Sean McDermott. You know, Rashard obviously played in the NFL for a little while, so did Anthony Lynn. So there are guys I think that can relate because they're not too far removed from being in that kind of an environment. I think they're still hip to the players, so to speak. And then at the same time, you know, they have playing experience in some capacity. Granted, NFL experience probably carries a little more weight, you know, so you would say, okay, Anthony Lynn and maybe Chris Rashard get the benefit of the doubt a little bit more from players having been through a 16-game NFL season, knowing what the grind is like day in and day out and to be a professional athlete. So those all carry weight. But, yeah, I mean, I think there's something to be said for the age and the relatability from coach to player. Yeah.
Chris Brown joins us. Let's take some phone calls. Brian in Hamburg. Go ahead, Brian. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good.
All right.
I just wanted to say, I think you know, we've been through, like, you know, Pegula likes to, it seems like, you know, we went to Sabres and then the Bills now. Because I think that my belief is we need somebody with experience. You got a struggling, you know, NFL franchise. I think that, you know, Whaley was kind of came in from Buddy Nix, kind of like a rookie. I think he kind of, the Bills' best bet is to get rid of him and bring in a GM, number one, that knows what to do, knows what's looking for, has the experience that's been here and done this to turn around a struggling franchise. And then that way we can hire a, you know, NFL head coach that has the experience and to turn around a struggling franchise as well. I mean, I'm not expecting us to go out and get a Bill Belichick, but I really don't think the Bills should be wasting their time, you know, bringing in a rookie head coach to try to use trial and error to figure out what he needs to do. I think the Bills need to bring in somebody that, like I said, has the experience that can, you know, evaluate the situation and say, all right, this is what we need to do, and we could turn around the problem that way.
So Doug Whaley is conducting the search, so he's not going anywhere. He's going to actually have the major say in hiring this coach. Experience is a factor, sure. It doesn't appear head coaching experience is important at all based on the four interviews so far.
It doesn't appear that way. But at some point, you got to become a head coach, right?
So yeah.
Everybody who's a head coach now obviously didn't have experience the first time they became a head coach. So I understand why you can't give a guy a chance.
Yeah, and I think there's also – you know, you can go to recent Bills history. The last two of the last three head coaches had been in other places before as head coaches. Chan Gailey, Rex Ryan, both had head coaching stints elsewhere, came here, had some measure of success, but no great success. Mm-hmm. Doug Marrone came in here, had a winning season, had been a head coach before, and then up and left. You know, and I'm sure you can find examples of experienced head coaches who have succeeded, you know, in their second jobs. Somebody told me a stat about a week or so ago, and I forgot to look it up, and it's just jarred from my memory right now. But I don't believe, aside from Tom Coughlin, that any other head coach has won a Super Bowl in their second head coaching place in the NFL. I think Tom Coughlin might be the only one. I could be wrong on that. That's
Belichick.
What I was told. I'd have to – oh, yeah, Belichick. Okay. Well, that's bogus information then, isn't it? See, I should have looked it up. But, no, I mean, I think you can spin this any way you want to. You can say, oh, I want a head coach with experience who knows what he's doing. And I get the point that the caller's trying to make, too. You want an experienced guy to come in and take what doesn't look like a team that's too far from playoff contention. If you have an experienced guy, you can kind of shepherd them to a couple more victories, and now you're in the postseason. I'm not going to dismiss the fact that, yeah, you probably do run the risk of not going to the playoffs this year with a new head coach who's got a lot of things he's got to figure out. But again, I'll go back to this, which I said last week. I think there's a lot to be said about the staff that you hire, which can be instrumental in how successful you are and how quickly you're successful. I mean, Adam Gase, you know, in Miami as a first-year head coach, had a pretty good first season, got to the playoffs. Granted, they didn't play great against the Steelers, but that Dolphins team hasn't been to the playoffs, I think, in 6 or 7 years. I think 2008 was the last time they were there. And that's a good first season. I mean, you know, you get to 10 wins and you get to the playoffs in your first year, in your first head coaching job. That's a heck of a job. Well, he's also got a killer staff. I mean, he did a good job of putting a coaching staff together. And I think that's one area where too many of Buffalo's head coaches over the years have just missed the mark. They have not hired top-notch coaching staffs, and I think it just puts you behind from the get-go, especially if you're a new head coach, to not have guys that you can trust that have taken on, you know, these kinds of challenges before and know how to operate, particularly when adversity strikes, because in the first year of a new head coach, that is going to happen at some point in the season.
You know, John and I were actually talking earlier about the pool of coaches right now across the league, guys that are being interviewed across the league. There aren't that many experienced head coaches, big names out there that, you know, a lot of these guys are young, getting their first shot.
Right. I know, you know, the Chargers were in Rhode Island, I guess, over the weekend. They interviewed two candidates, including Matt Patricia, the defensive coordinator for the Patriots. And, you know, you've got a lot of these young guys in the mix now, and people are like, well, where are all the big names? Well, the big names are 70 years old. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tom Coughlin's 71, and no knock on him, you know, was a great head coach. But I think what we see now is an indication as to how much these current GMs in the league in need of filling that head coaching role are looking for that new fresh blood, that new generation leader of the next set of head coaches in this league. They want to find that guy, which is an admirable thing, but it's not easy because it is – as much homework as you do, it's still a guessing game, I think, at the end of the day.
We had a really interesting guest on the show last week. Dominique Foxworth played in the league and writes now on websites. And he talked about how you really should look for a CEO as opposed to a coordinator. And I'm wondering how much that thinking goes into Doug Whaley's list, the four interviews he's done so far. Two on the offensive side of the ball, two on the defense. But I wonder how much of his focus is, you know, are you going to, for instance, for Anthony Lynn, are you going to back away from play calling and be the CEO? I wouldn't be surprised if that's what Lynn's plan is, and I think I'd like that if that were his plan.
Yeah, I would almost prefer that the head coach does not call the plays,
particularly
if it's one of these guys who is in his first head coaching job, which would be the case for just about everybody. I mean, you know, Lynn's got one game. So, I mean, all of those guys across the board, I would prefer they not call plays. Now, it is hard for some guys. They can't let go of that stuff and need to feel that control on game day. But I think you're best served with all the decisions you've got to make on a game day. You know, you can have enough influence through the course of the week and game planning meetings and things like that where I think you have to cede control of the play calling duties and just weigh in when you feel you need to on a game day. You know, I mean, everybody kind of harkens back to what Marv used to do with the goal line.
Yeah.
You know, goal-to-go decisions that he used to make with the play calling and things like that. If you want to insert yourself there, a key fourth-down situation, absolutely. I mean, that's where people are looking to the head coach to make a call or going for two or whatnot. But to run the whole thing and then have all the coaching decisions in terms of clock management, coaches challenge, you know, all that stuff, I just think it's a lot to have on your plate. And I would rather have them do A-plus work just as the head coach overseeing the whole thing then do B-plus work and be a play caller and a head coach on game day.
And yet we have two examples from the wild card games, Ben McAdoo with the Giants, Adam Gase from Miami.
Right.
They're on the sidelines calling plays, you know.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's like we
it
said.
It works. You can make it work,
yeah,
I guess.
Some guys can't let go, but it's just my personal preference, and, you know, I know it doesn't really mean a whole lot, but I would just like to see a guy just be the head coach. Just be the head coach. Oversee the whole thing. Don't have your hands, like, with a death grip, you know, on play calling.
Now, how important is it when these guys come in for an interview to have names. This is going to be my defensive coordinator. This is going to be my offensive coordinator. When you still have guys coaching all around, I mean, it has to be tough for these guys who are being interviewed because some of them are still coaching. So they're on the phones trying to juggle. If I get this job, I need you to come and coach with me. Is it that important to have names on a list that are going to come and coach with you when you go in for an interview?
I think it is, yeah. I think you have to, if not for anything else, to show you have your ducks in a row, you know, because we all know it happens fast. Once you're hired, you better get on the horn in a hurry and lock guys down. Mm-hmm. And once that first domino falls, whoever hires their head coach first, watch how quickly the other ones fall into place because then it becomes a race.
Yeah.
For assembling a quality coaching staff. I mean, that's what go back to it again. It's a huge thing. And we've seen Gus Bradley linked to possibly being a coordinator for Washington. And, you know, we've also seen him linked to Anthony Lynn. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Mike McCoy, you know, the fired head coach in San Diego. He's been linked to Sean McDermott, but he's also been linked to Vance Joseph. So you wonder how all those behind the – you know, the behind-closed-door agreements happen.
Yeah.
But it's clear that the assistant coaches still have to keep their options open because they don't know who's getting a job and where and when or if.
Yeah. Dave and Kenmore on the line with us. Dave, welcome. You're with me and Donald and Chris Brown.
What I wanted to say was very similar to what you were just talking about, that for me a head coach isn't an offense or a defensive coach. That what you really want is that a guy like Marv Levy that can come in and can assemble the team coaches because it's the offensive coordinator and the defensive coordinator's job to handle those ends of the business, and it's really the head coach's job to coordinate everybody and make sure they're all on the same page. And anybody that was here in Buffalo back in the Levy days with Bill Polian, they were ready to drive him out of town. And I think what they're looking for with the youth being interviewed is to find somebody that they can stay with, that they can get Waverly and a new head coach here and end up with somebody like a Belichick that will be here for years.
That'd be ideal, obviously. You know, a younger guy who can stick around for a while. But it's just hard to imagine based on what we've been through around here.
Right. But I would hope that, you know, seeing that Doug Whaley is spearheading this search is an indication that perhaps the structure at the top is changing in that the relationship will be coach and GM and then GM to owner rather than having a two-pronged approach with coach and GM reporting to ownership separately. I really think you can't underestimate the importance of having the GM and the coach in lockstep in every way, shape, and form. Coach talks directly to GM, GM then talks to ownership. And I think that's the way it's got to be. That's not to say that ownership, if they have a question to the coach, can't go and talk to him. Mm-hmm. But I just think, I don't know, I just got the sense that they're, while they did have phone conversations together or conference calls or meetings together, there was just this sense that there were different times where different parts of the hierarchy were talking to the top. And I just think that's all got to be unified from the very beginning. And, you know, maybe seeing Whaley getting the bulk of the duties here in terms of landing the new head coach, I think the Pegulas feel they know him enough and trust him enough to say, you know what, we've worked with you for a few years now. We know you a whole lot better than we did 2 years ago when we had to do an impromptu coaching search. You've got the run of this, and let's move forward from here.
Now, when you look at this thing and you look at these coaches coming in, and John and I talked about this last week, if the first thing they have to do is to hire a coach, you know, that's one A has to be what's going on at quarterback, right? So when Doug Whaley says, what questions do you have for us, that coach interviewed has to say who's going to be the quarterback.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a no-brainer. There's probably some give and take there, too. It's not just the coaching candidate saying to him, well, who's the quarterback? Obviously, he's going to ask him that, but then the question right back to him might be, what do you think of Tyrod Taylor?
Right.
You know, and then you've got to have a firm working knowledge, and hopefully you've seen a few games on tape before you're going into that interview so you can at least put together a competent answer as to where you feel you can maybe take his game, what you feel his ceiling is, whether you feel you can win consistently with that guy. Mm-hmm.
Which brings us to this, the interesting report, I think it was yesterday morning, from Adam Schefter about Pegula is expressing remorse to Anthony Lynn about Tyrod not playing in the season finale. You saw that over the weekend. Yeah. I'm not quite sure how to interpret that.
I didn't know what to make of that. It just seemed very vague and cryptic to me. I don't know what.
I want to believe, Chris, and that it's an agent created, an agent maybe for Anthony Lynn, who is trying to promote his guy around the league and trying to show potential suitors, including the Bills, that he really wasn't responsible for that decision, and maybe that's what accounted for the poor performance at the Jets 8 days ago. You think that's possible?
Or? Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can put the performance of the team in Week 17 on Anthony Lynn in any way, shape, or form, and the reason why is – as soon as the other players knew Tyrod wasn't playing, I think it was a signal to them, subconsciously, this is an exhibition game.
Yeah.
Why am I going to lay it on the line if they don't feel it's important enough to play our starting quarterback? Yeah. And so while you understand the idea in trying to get a look at E.J. Manuel or even Cardale Jones in the fourth quarter, and I understand the evaluation idea, but in terms of expecting the best from the players in an instance where there wasn't anything to play for but better draft position if you lose or worse draft position if you win, you could tell going into that game that the players were not going to get up for that like they had the previous 15 games.
I just thought it was an odd
report.
Though,
yeah. Well, and when they're odd, it kind of screams of agents.
Hey, Chris, so you'll be following the coaching search on a daily basis on the website. You also have a story coming up about probably a pretty big turnover in the receiving corps for the Bills.
Well,
is
you've
that what
got,
you're looking at?
Yeah, you've got four receivers who are going to be unrestricted free agents effective in March. And, you know, some people will say, well, you know, what did the receiving corps do? We have 30th in passing, this, that, and the other. But it's Robert Woods, Marquise Goodwin, Brandon Tate, and Justin Hunter. And, you know, I was talking to Sammy Watkins leading up to the Miami game, and he said, yeah, we've talked about it. You know, this room could look a whole lot different. Mm-hmm. You know, some of these guys could be back. None of them can be back. And, you know, with a new head coach, who knows? You know, the turnover could be even higher than initially anticipated because those aren't, quote-unquote, his guys. So, you know, I think it's a situation where you could see great turnover. And I know there is some measure of concern on the part of fans that with 24 unrestricted free agents counting Percy Harvin, who's probably going to retire again, but there's another receiver. I mean, we didn't even count him in the mix because I think the full anticipation is he's going to be retired again. But you got a lot of turnover there. And, you know, for a guy like Robert Woods, Tyrod Taylor has been his quarterback for the last 2 years. He's put a lot of time in trying to get that chemistry on the field. And if Tyrod is back, I think that could greatly influence Robert's decision as to where he would prefer to be. Now, it takes two to tango. He doesn't have the end-all, be-all answer on that. I mean, he may want to be back, but, you know, the money's got to be right too, I would think. This is his chance to make money. It's his second contract. Same thing with Goodwin. So, you know, there's a lot of variables here at work. But, yeah, we're going to kind of cover in depth tomorrow how – this receiving corps could look a whole lot different in 2017.
Well, seeing that you're covering it, there's a good one playing tonight, and Mike Williams out of Clemson, who could fall to the Bills at number 10. You going to be watching that game, watching him?
I'll be watching the game. I've seen him play before. I don't know. I caught one game where he was not noticeable at all, and then he made a couple of catches late, and it's like, oh, that was pretty good. And I don't know. Maybe it's the way that Clemson's offense works, but they throw it a lot. They don't seem to use him the same way they used Sammy Watkins just a few years ago. You know, Sammy Watkins was Captain Bubble Screen, and I think they use Williams a lot differently than him, and maybe it's because they feel his size is so superior, it's better to use him down the field. I mean, he's a big guy. He's 6'3", 225, and he can just out-muscle DBs at the college level. So, yeah, I'd be interested to see because he's going against some quality corners tonight. So it'll be a good test for sure.
Hey, Chris, thanks for this. Great to have you here.
Yeah, you got it.
Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com. Joining us when we return, we're going to talk about Chris Richard, defensive coordinator for the Seattle Seahawks. We'll talk with Bob Candotta of the Seattle Times, who has a couple of thoughts on the Bills interview with Chris Richard yesterday. That's coming up next on the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
A Buffalo Bills sports update brought to you by Yancey Fancy, New York's artisan cheese.
Four interviews down for the Buffalo Bills in their coaching search. Who knows if there are any more to come. The Bills interviewed two candidates over the weekend. On Saturday, they talked with Arizona offensive coordinator Harold Goodwin, who spent 12 years coaching the NFL. He coached under Arizona head coach Bruce Arians for 10 seasons. Yesterday, they interviewed Chris Richard, who spent 6 years in the NFL. He has coached under Pete Carroll his entire career at Seattle and at USC. Richard is the defensive coordinator for the Seattle Seahawks for the past couple of years. And no more interviews, at least reported by the Buffalo Bills. We don't know if there are more interviews to come, and we have no timetable for the selection of a head coach, but four coaching interviews conducted by the Bills already. Meantime, the playoffs move on. The division round is set on Saturday at 4:35. It'll be Seattle at Atlanta in one of the NFC games. Saturday night, 8:15, Houston at New England at Foxborough. Sunday, the early game, 1:05, Pittsburgh in Kansas City. And then Sunday late, 4:40 p.m., Green Bay plays at Dallas. Steelers quarterback Ben Roethlisberger was walking around in a walking boot on his right foot after their victory over the Miami Dolphins in the AFC wildcard yesterday. Roethlisberger said he does not know the nature of the injury, but says he will not miss any time. Steelers assistant coach Joey Porter was arrested at a Pittsburgh bar last night, accused of assaulting a doorman. Porter was taken to jail and then released. The Steelers acknowledge an incident involving Joey Porter. College football's national championship game tonight, the Crimson Tide of Alabama and the Clemson Tigers, 8 o'clock in Tampa. Nick Saban and Alabama on the verge of 5 national championships in 8 seasons, a feat never completed at the highest level of the sport during the poll era. One of the top prospects in the NFL draft is now quarterback Mitch Trubisky of North Carolina. He has decided to forego his senior season and enter the NFL draft. And the Buffalo Sabres still reveling in their comeback win on Saturday. They beat the Winnipeg Jets by a score of 4-3, Buffalo with 3 goals in the third period. Next up for the Sabres, a game against Philadelphia at home tomorrow night, 7 o'clock at KeyBank Center. And that is the update from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live from One Bills Drive as we talk about the Bills coaching search. We'll have some wildcard discussion as the afternoon moves along. But joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, the beat reporter. He covers the Seattle Seahawks for the Seattle Times. Happy to have Bob Condotta on the line with us. Bob, John and Donald here. Thank you very much for joining us.
Sure, thanks. How are you guys doing?
Good. Chris Richard comes out of seemingly nowhere to be interviewed by the Bills over the weekend. As far as we know, that's the only interview he has taken so far. Is that right, from to your knowledge?
Yeah, that's my understanding. He's in his second year as a defensive coordinator, and so I think he's starting to get a little bit of interest now that he's done this for a couple of years. But, yeah, I don't know of any other interviews with him.
What can you tell us about Chris Richard, and how much of a role does he play with Seattle's defense?
He played at USC, under Pete Carroll, and was drafted by the Seahawks, played here for about 4 years, and then got into coaching back at USC under Pete Carroll, and then came with Carroll when Carroll got here in 2010. So that's really the only, his coaching influence is largely Pete Carroll, both as a player and played here for the Seahawks under Holmgren, but his coaching has almost solely been under Pete Carroll. He was initially a defensive backs coach and got a lot of credit in the 2010, 11, 12, when that group began to come together, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, Cam Chance, Boom, and all that. So, those guys have always spoken very highly of him, and they really lobbied for him to become the defensive coordinator when Dan Quinn left after the 2014 season to go to Atlanta. There's always going to be a little bit of a question of how much power the defensive coordinator here has, because Pete Carroll also has a background as defense. Carroll was his own defensive coordinator for much of his time when he was the head coach at USC, mm-hmm. and that's his background. And, I think there's always sort of been a thought that they're not going to do much schematically or philosophically defensively that basically isn't coming from Carroll. But obviously there's a day-to-day aspect of organizing the defense and being the guy that's in the meeting room sort of talking directly to the players that the defensive coordinator has to handle.
Bob, regardless of how much control he has there with the defense, what's his coaching style?
Well, he coaches down on the field. He's known to be a little bit more. They've had 3 defensive coordinators here under Carroll, and they had Gus Bradley, who went to become the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Bradley was the defensive coordinator here actually for 4 years, started under Mora, then with Carroll. Gus was a real. If you ever met him, maybe the friendliest guy in the entire world. Was very, sort of motivational speaking that way. Dan Quinn was much more analytic, much more sort of soft spoken and. kind of did his work behind the scenes a little bit more. And Rashard, I think, is a little bit of a mix of those guys. He's he can be real fiery, and if you watch the Seahawks Atlanta game this year in October, you know, he was getting into it with Richard Sherman. That was one of sort of Richard Sherman's tiffs that he's gotten into with coaches this year. But, you know, that sort of started with Chris Rashard sort of yelling at him about a touchdown that had been given up. And so he likes to coach right down there on the field, and he's not afraid to sort of get in the face of players if they need it. He is, you know, sort of a younger guy, 37 years old, and not so far removed from his playing days that I think he still doesn't sort of feel that playing intensity on game day.
So the fact that he's still young, 37, 38 years old, does that have anything to do with, you know, he's able to be down there on the field and talk to the players, they can come back at him? I mean, if he's arguing with Richard Sherman, is that a good thing on the sideline?
Well, I sort of just brought that up to speak to his intent. I mean, it's one incident. I don't think that would be the first coach-player argument in the history of football. So I think that does happen. But, he does see us sort of always have that relationship, especially with the secondary guys, you know, where it's been regarded that they are real close and all of that. And, you know, he's talked about having, you know, you got to be in a little bit of a different role once you become the coordinator and how you do that. You know, Rashard did say he sort of wished he'd handled that situation a little bit differently, that he would have liked to have diffused that more than sort of maybe helped escalating it. But, you know, so maybe that playing part of him got into that a little bit. But, you know, in general, again, he's a guy that, you know, those guys have always spoken very highly of. And, you know, especially the guys in the secondary who, you know, that group has been together, especially the key guys. But, you know, even Deshaun Shedd now has been here 5 years. I mean, basically, and Jeremy Lane has. I mean, basically the five guys they have that typically start in their secondary have all been here since 2011 or 12. And you know, Rashard has always been either their position coach or the coordinator. And those guys all speak very highly of him.
Talking with Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times about Chris Rashard, who interviewed yesterday with the Buffalo Bills for the head coaching vacancy here. Rashard, third-round pick, played 4 years in the league. Do you remember him as a player, Bob? And was he, like, out of the mold of Richard Sherman, that type of fiery player on the field?
Yeah, he wasn't quite like that. He was you know, he was here kind of in the early 2000s, like I said, sort of the Mike Holmgren era, as Holmgren was sort of getting it off the ground there, 02, 03, 04. You know, Rashard's been pretty frank that, you know, he didn't quite have the career he wished he'd had. You know, he was a third-round pick and sort of was a backup-slash-special-teams kind of guy, and I think was with the Seahawks for 3 years and then spent a final year with the 49ers. You know, he was sort of a star high school quarterback and things like that, and went to USC and was a very highly recruited high school player out of the Los Angeles area who went to USC, actually signed there before Pete Carroll was the coach, but then was one of the guys who was there with Pete. They've talked often. He had a pick six that helped win a game, that basically won a game for him in Carroll's first year, that Carroll has always pointed to as a huge turning point for his program at USC. So he's always had a really good relationship with Carroll. And like I say, once he was done playing, sort of went right back to USC and started his coaching career under Carroll.
That Seattle defensive coordinator's job is sort of a launching pad for head coaches now, right? With Quinn and Gus Bradley before him. Is that maybe why Chris Rashard would be a logical candidate for this kind of interview?
Yeah, you definitely would be interested, you know, and people can read that one in two ways. Obviously, Gus Bradley, it did not go well for him in Jacksonville, but with you know, Dan Quinn, obviously it's going real well, and they faced the Seahawks this week in the playoffs. So with Dan having gotten the Falcons sort of back to where they were a couple of years ago, so it's just sort of that's how the NFL tends to work. You know, people look for the coordinators who are part of teams that are doing well and units that are doing well, and the Seattle defense has been, you know, almost historically great, you know, 4 straight years prior to this year of allowing the fewest points in the NFL, which was, you know, the longest streak in the history of the league prior to the Super Bowl era. So, you know, Rashard is regarded as being a huge part of that. So I'm sure he's one of those guys that people are just sort of getting interested in trying to find out more about.
You think after, I mean, he has his hands full. So we talked about it earlier. He's only really done this one interview, right?
Yeah,
with the Bills.
According to the court, yeah.
But they're still playing, obviously. So he has his hands full. And obviously, he has his hands full this week with that Atlanta offense that they run down there in Atlanta. Do you think after, let's just say they lost this week, that it would vamp up a little bit more if these teams haven't hired coaches? Maybe he'll get some more interviews?
I don't really know for sure. I mean, those tend to be such an individual thing, what specific teams are looking for. Mm-hmm. I don't know that they always all have the same list so that they're all just going to interview all the same guys. So, San Francisco is going to interview Tom Cable, who's the offensive line coach here next week. So I don't think he's a factor for that. I haven't heard his name in connection with the Rams. It sounds like the Jaguars are sort of narrowing in on Mike Smith, maybe. So I'm not sure that there's any other NFL head coaching jobs right now that Chris Richard is going to be connected to.
And by the way, we understand it, the Bills or anyone else now cannot talk to Chris Richard for another week, right? Until after the Seahawks play Saturday at Atlanta, is that right?
Sort of, yeah. You can only do it here, so that's the one tricky part. So yeah. When a team is in the playoffs, you have to go to where they are. It was last week when they couldn't be interviewed at all, and so you can do it then once you get into this part of the season, and then yeah, the rules change a little bit later.
Okay, hey Bob, thanks for your insight. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Bob Condotta is the beat writer, covers the Seahawks for the Seattle Times, talking with us about Chris Richard, who interviewed for the Buffalo Bills head coaching vacancy yesterday in Seattle.
That mean that, if they're playing down in Atlanta, that means they have to wait until they get back to Seattle to interview him, to interview him again?
I'm not sure what the rules say. I don't know. All right, we're going to get back and talk more about this coaching search and take your phone calls when we return, 803-0550, or toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We're back from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, getting the week started with discussion of the Bills' coaching search, and we'd love to engage you. Phone lines open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Our Twitter poll, the Bills have interviewed four head coaching candidates so far. Who do you think is the best fit? Again, this is so far. No word on whether further interviews are on the schedule. But Twitter poll, we've got more than 1,100 votes cast on the Twitter poll so far. Who's the best fit of the four interviews so far for the Bills? Well, 40% say Anthony Lynn, the Bills' own offensive coordinator last year. 29% say the guy we just talked about, Seattle defensive coordinator Chris Richard. 26% say Carolina defensive coordinator Sean McDermott. 5% say Arizona offense coordinator Harold Goodwin. Obviously, there are other candidates. These are the four the Bills have interviewed. And if you've got somebody else you'd like to throw in there, give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Here's a call from Butch in Buffalo. Go ahead, Butch.
John, Donald, thanks for taking my call. It was a pleasure to talk to you guys. Great show.
Thanks.
I wanted to call in about a week ago when they were speaking about Doug Williams. He was taking all the bullets that everybody was throwing at him. Well, John, you know this, and I hope you do, and what people do know this is, and if they don't, I'm going to tell you. This is a true story. You could check the resources. Hugh Jackson, two times, was Doug Williams' choice to be head coach. Before Doug Marone, Hugh Jackson. When Rex Ryan, Hugh Jackson. Hugh Jackson was in Buffalo at downtown at the Hyatt waiting to become head coach. At the last minute, they kept Rex Ryan, and he spent the night overnight, and they made the deal during the middle of the night. So two times that Russ Brandon selected a head coach, but Doug Willie was the general manager. It showed you the power at that time, what Doug Willie didn't have. He didn't have the power of the GM because the president of the team, which is Russ Brandon, his friend, was really calling the shots. Now, since he caught all this heat and it's his last go-round, and everybody wants him out of town, he's going to do it his way. So if he does get fired, he can say, I finally did it my way. I drafted my way. I got players my way. I have a coach that's going to use the players that I selected, just like you guys said, of the way a coach and a general manager is supposed to go. So I applaud Doug Whaley for going the younger route. I applaud Doug Whaley being an African-American as he's going out to select or look at or interview these African-American coaches. Even if they don't get hired, it still goes on their like a stripe on their badge. As an NFL team looked at me at one time in my life to be a head coach. So I applaud Doug. I know Doug's going to pick the right guy. I wish people just relax and stop looking back what happened in the past. It wasn't his fault. He didn't have anything to do with it, but he was on the team. He's the team player, and he wears it on his sleeve. I like that. So I just wanted to say that, John. Donald, thanks so much for taking my call, and I'll listen to the rest of the show. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Butch. It certainly is Doug Whaley's show now. There's no question about that.
I mean, it's all his show. You know, the coach, the coaching staff, the players that he has to bring in here, which he has to bring in a lot of players because you have 24 unrestricted guys that are, you know, most of them are probably going to get out of here. So the draft, you're going to have to draft guys. I mean, this whole football operation is all on Doug Whaley right now. So, you know, he lives and dies by his decision.
Yeah. Hey, clarification, the boys in the control room looked this up about the rules for interviewing coaches. You asked about when they might be able to talk to Chris Richard again. Apparently, coaches currently in the playoffs cannot be interviewed now until they lose or during the bye week after the conference championship. So in Chris Richard's case, if they lose Sunday or Saturday at Atlanta, he obviously is available to be interviewed. If they win, you'd have to wait until after the conference championship game, the bye week after conference championship. You don't like that?
If he's the guy, that means that we have another.
Well, it could be a week if he's the guy. It could be this weekend, Sunday again. It's funny.
After the conference championship?
If he loses, he could be interviewed Sunday. If he wins, you got to wait until after the conference championship. Right. It's funny. You want the Bills to have a sense of urgency about this. You want the Bills to be proactive. They obviously have done four interviews in a week. You also don't want them to jump at somebody.
You're right.
So I don't – it's a tough call. I mean, we talk about the power that Whaley has in this coaching search. It's a tough call.
It's a tough call. Now, if he is the guy, you know, he hasn't interviewed anywhere else yet, you know, so maybe you had that where nobody else is really on him and he's really your dark horse that you're going to end up hiring. I don't know if he's the guy or not.
I don't know either.
It was interesting when Brownie said once one team hires their coach, watch how quickly everybody else gets to hiring their coaches because they're trying to get it done fast so that they can get a good staff together. Because once one guy gets hired, he's going to start to put his staff together. He's going to reach out to the best coaches across the league. And so every other team is now in desperation mode trying to hire their guys so they can have the best staff.
We'll talk more about this. We're going to talk about the weekend's wildcard playoff games also with Greg Rosenthal of NFL.com. That's coming up after the top of the hour. So we got one more hour to go. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive, where the Buffalo Bills coaching search continues. A couple of interviews over the weekend for the Bills. On Saturday, they interviewed Arizona Cardinals offense coordinator Harold Goodwin, who has spent 12 years in the league. He's worked under Bruce Arians for 10 of those 12 years. He led the Cardinals offense to the number one ranking in the NFL a couple of seasons ago. Yesterday, they interviewed Chris Richard, defensive coordinator for the Seattle Seahawks, who spent just 6 years coaching in the league. Four interviews conducted by the Bills so far. No timetable yet on when a decision will be made, and no word on whether further interviews are scheduled. The second round of the playoffs, the division round, is set now after the weekend of wildcard games. It starts this Saturday at 4:30 when Seattle plays at Atlanta. The late game on Saturday, Houston plays at New England Saturday night, 8:15. On Sunday, Pittsburgh and Kansas City go at 1:05 at Arrowhead. And then late Sunday, it's Green Bay and Dallas at 4:40, the divisional round of the playoffs. The Steelers expect to have Ben Roethlisberger ready to go for that game in Kansas City. He left the stadium last night wearing a walking boot on his right foot. He told reporters he doesn't know the nature of the injury, but said he will not miss time. The Steelers play Kansas City on Sunday. Roethlisberger suffered an injury on the final play of the game with 4.5 minutes left to play. North Carolina quarterback Mitch Trubisky has announced that he will forego his senior season and enter the NFL draft. ESPN's Mel Kiper says he is the number one rated draft eligible quarterback. He spent his first 2 years seeing spot duty, but he threw for 3,700 yards and 30 touchdowns this past season. College football's national championship game tonight, 8 o'clock, Clemson and Alabama in Tampa. Nick Saban and Alabama on the verge of college football history. A win tonight would give the Crimson Tide 5 national championships in 8 seasons, a feat never accomplished before during the poll era. And the Buffalo Sabres still celebrating their comeback win on Saturday over Winnipeg. Next up for them, a game against Philadelphia tomorrow night, 7 o'clock at the KeyBank Center. And that is the sports update. John Murphy, Donald Jones coming to you live from One Bills Drive as we move into hour number 3 of the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO.
Have you been to a Sabres game yet this year?
I have not. Why are you going to call me out on that?
Oh, all right.
Okay. Have you?
I've been to a few. Yeah, I've been to a few. We got to go to one.
All right, I'll go. Absolutely. Thanks for making that public that I haven't attended.
Well, I needed to make sure that everybody
I'll get to
knew.
A game one of these days.
One of these days.
There were four wild card playoff games over the weekend, pretty much all of them underwhelming. Joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline is the Around the NFL editor for NFL.com, Greg Rosenthal, to talk about these games and talk about what's to come. Greg, it's John Murphy and Donald Jones. Thank you for being on the air with us. We appreciate it.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Greg, have you been to a Sabres game yet this year?
I have not. I've been meaning to. It's a long trip from L.A., but I hear good things.
Yeah, well, okay. It's a long way to go.
Yeah.
Am I correct in saying that all four games were underwhelming, Greg? I mean, I don't know what the ratings will show, but certainly it was not the weekend that many of us had hoped for when we looked at these wild card games.
Yeah, I mean, I was in Houston for Connor Cook versus Brock Osweiler, so the expectations were – you know, low for that one. But, I was disappointed by the rest of the games. I think Giants-Packers was a memorable game. And for three quarters, you were pretty much on the edge of your seat. It was back and forth. It was a lot of good storylines in that game and great players. So, that game didn't disappoint me too much. But it would have been nice to have a classic, and none of them really ended up that way at all.
A lot of these, Greg, it seemed like to me, are the product of – you know, suspect quarterbacking, the game you saw, certainly Matt Moore in Miami didn't put up much of a fight. I mean, that's what happens when you get kind of substandard quarterbacks going in these games, isn't it?
Right, and there weren't 12 title contenders this year, not even if you squinted real hard and just thought something was going to be crazy, especially when Derek Carr got hurt. That really lowered the number. This weekend, to me, was just kind of cutting out the fat, cutting out the teams that really had no chance whatsoever. I think the Giants are really the only team that lost over the weekend that would have had any chance of winning another game in the playoffs. So I think it sets, even though it was a little boring this weekend, it sets up a really good divisional round where I think three of the games are absolutely outstanding. And games like Packers-Cowboys, I mean, that would be a fantastic Super Bowl, and we've got it in the divisional round.
Greg, did you choose that game? Was that like the assignment that you chose?
No, they wanted a quality, a game that really suited the quality of the reporter that they were sending there. So that they figured Connor Cook. You're the Connor Cook of our group. We're going to send you this.
I see how that goes. No, but to talk about that Green Bay game, I saw a stat last night and it talked about Aaron Rodgers. And since his last interception in week 10 of the season, he's had 285 pass attempts, almost 2,400 yards, and 22 touchdown passes without throwing an interception. I mean, is this guy that good? Can they really run the table, beat Dallas this week, and go all the way to the Super Bowl?
I do think they can. I think this is the worst possible matchup for Dallas. I've been waiting really to see this Cowboys defense get exposed in a big-time game, and they've been able to win shootouts. I mean, they did it against Pittsburgh, but they don't have much of a pass rush, good secondary. But I don't think they want to get in a track meet, and that's what they're probably going to have to do the next 2 weeks if they're going to make it to the Super Bowl, if they wind up playing the Packers and if they get past the Falcons. To me, Aaron Rodgers' best is better than anyone else's best. And it's really blown up by the fact that they have the best pass-protecting offensive line. So if you've got the best quarterback when he's playing great and you've got the best pass protection in the league, it's like, how do you stop that? The Giants could not get after it.
You know, what about that game, Green Bay and the Giants, there was – I don't really believe in momentum, Greg, but there was the moment when the Packers went for it on fourth and short. They were stopped. The Giants came back and scored. Again, I don't think it's momentum, but there was a moment when I thought, okay, now Green Bay could be in a little trouble. I was really impressed how they responded after that moment. They just kept plugging away after that.
Right, that's the thing. You look at the final score, 38-13. It was a one-point game. You know, it's less than 5 minutes left in the third quarter. They get the ball after that play, you're right, and they go down the field 20 yards, 19 yards. I think it was a 4 or 5 play drive where they just put it on the Giants right away. I think the injury to Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, you don't want to make excuses, but But I think that really hurt the Giants. It limited what they do in terms of their blitzes. This has been the best blitzing team all year, and they just could not get after Rodgers. And when push comes to shove, he's got so many weapons. I mean, people that haven't been watching them all year maybe don't realize how good Davante Adams is, how good Jared Cook has been at tight end for them. Mm-hmm. And even guys like Geronimo Allison have made plays, and now you have Randall Cobb having his best game probably in a couple years. And it's like they can lose a guy like Jordy Nelson, and yet they still just have the depth to lay it on a great defense.
Are there any updates on Jordy Nelson? Do we anticipate he is out this weekend?
No updates yet. You know, the fact that they called it a rib injury and immediately ruled him out certainly, you know, makes you think that something's broken there. Rib injuries are tricky. You know, sometimes it's, you know, these guys are so tough. Sometimes they play through if it's one fracture, and then sometimes if it's a really bad break or it's a couple ribs, I mean, there's absolutely no chance he can play. So it's too early to know whether he's going to be out there.
Yeah, I tell you, if you have a rib injury, it's tough to play through that, especially at wide receiver. But now, Greg, I need to know, now I'm a former player. John and I talked about this, this whole yacht trip that the Giants wide receivers took. How much do you read into that with, you know, the game that those guys played yesterday, especially Odell Beckham?
Look, it wasn't one of his best games. He's had some drops this year. He's carried that offense all year. I don't put anything really into the boat thing. I do maybe put into that it's his first playoff game, and after he had a drop or two early, you know, he did not respond well to that. Mm-hmm. You know, some of those throws by Eli, as it's been all year, weren't really that great. But to throw to him 11 times, only get 28 yards, this guy is he's a high-strung, competitive guy. You saw it after the game where he's emotional, very emotional. And maybe Eli said it today when Eli spoke with the media. Maybe Odell put a little too much pressure on himself to really carry that team. And frankly, he's been carrying that offense all year. This was the fifth-worst scoring team in the league. So I think this was going to show up eventually for them, and it showed up in the divisional round that they just couldn't score enough points.
Hey, Greg, all four of the divisional playoff games coming up this week are rematches, regular season games, including the Green Bay-Dallas game. And Dallas handled them back in week 6 up at Lambeau, but I think most of us feel that Green Bay, for whatever reason, is a lot different than they were back in mid-October, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, their offense took a while to get going. I mean, they're an offensive team. The defense still has questions, and I don't think they're going to do very well against that offensive line in Dallas. But they really did not hit their stride. As recently as week 11, the Redskins really laid it on Green Bay. They were 4-6, and after that point, they've been the best offense in the league. And so I don't think you can take too much out of that first game. But I do think Green Bay secondary, especially at cornerback, it could be an issue. So this is a game where you really like to see the old Dez Bryant. You'd like to see Cole Beasley. I think it's going to be important for them to win on the outside, Dallas. I don't think you can just only rely on Ezekiel Elliott.
You notice we haven't talked about the AFC yet.
Yeah.
But I'm still not going to talk about it. I want to get to the other NFC game this week. It's intriguing to me. Seattle coming across country to Atlanta to play. I think, Atlanta's offense is amazing right now. And Seattle's defense, to me, is not the same Seattle defense of the past year. So what do you think about that game?
If you look at it, and it played out Sunday, whenever a team's gotten the title of, like, the best defense left, or you've seen a good defense play a good offense in this season, the offense wins. And you said it. Seattle has not been quite the same. They still have a great roster, really a historical group of guys in terms of that they've played together so long and been at the top of the league for so long. But this Falcons offense is as good an offense as we've seen in the NFL for years. I think it is the best offense out there. I think they're even better at home on that fast track. They can get big plays from anyone. I mean, no team had even close to as many 40-yard plays as Matt Ryan and the Falcons did in the passing game. And I love their two running backs. So I think this is the ultimate test for this Seahawks defense, and I think it's going to be tough for them to go in there and win.
With Greg Rosenthal, NFL.com writer, host of the Around the NFL podcast, and joining us to talk about the wild card games and the games coming up this weekend. I'll talk about the AFC, Greg.
Right.
And I know Houston is up against it. I will say the one thing in their favor, and maybe the one thing that I took away from the game against Oakland, was Jadeveon Clowney. I think he has finally established himself as the player that many thought he would be coming out as the first overall pick in the draft. I don't know if that makes a difference coming up this weekend against New England, but I was impressed with him and impressed with the way he played.
He's been awesome all season. He's a fun guy to watch because, you know, just as a fan, there aren't many NFL players that just make other NFL players look weak or look slow because they're all so unbelievably athletic. But Clowney is just at another level. I mean, he ran down Amari Cooper on one play. You know, he just throws offensive linemen aside. And he's bookended by Whitney Mercilus, who's really playing well. They have a good secondary. I think it's a big-time challenge for the Patriots offense. But, you know, the problem is you just don't know if the Texans are going to score. But I think it'll be an interesting game when New England has the ball. And I was in the locker room after that game, and, you know, I talked to A.J. Bouye, the cornerback, and he said what I think a lot of Texans fans are feeling is that when he sees Clowney playing this well, all he thinks about is, man, what will it be like when 99 J.J. Watt is back out there with this team, and it's Watt, Mercilus, and Clowney. You'll really be scary next year.
Now, it's interesting that you said he's finally coming into himself, John, because he's like 23 years old.
Yeah. So this is his third year, right?
This is third year, but at 23, it's like, man, how much better can he get? He hasn't even really come into his prime yet, usually around 25, 26. So I'm interested to see him play this week against that New England offense, especially in New England. We know those guys really score points, and it'll be tough because they get the ball out so fast, right? So can those guys get there? Now, Clowney's a big dude, so he can bat a lot of passes down, and it's interesting for me to see that matchup right there.
Hey, Greg,
and the offensive line for the Patriots has really been an underrated story. I think it's been a problem the last couple of years, especially last year, but the return of Dante Scarnecchia, who's been their offensive line coach, was for many years. They are such a better unit. I mean, the Bills certainly saw this when they played them. They are playing at a much higher level. I think Brady is getting a lot more support this year than he did a year ago at this time.
Hey, speaking of Clowney being in his prime, is Brock Osweiler in his prime? Is that as good as it gets from him, do you think, last Saturday?
I mean, that was one of, if not his best games, but let's not get carried away.
Yeah.
You know, he avoided making a big mistake. He had a very nice drive before halftime, but the reality is they had 16 drives in that game. That is a lot of drives, and they didn't even crack 300 yards, which is actually lower than their average, lower than one of the worst offenses in the league has averaged all season. So I don't think he suddenly turned the corner. I think they managed that game well just as a coaching staff.
I got to say, it makes me cringe to watch DeAndre Hopkins react to some of Osweiler's throws sometimes. You know what I mean? It's almost like you don't want to watch that. And you know, Hopkins is a great player, and Osweiler got on the ball a couple times Saturday, but you can tell that it's not really a finely tuned machine there,
right.
Is it?
No, it's been bubbling up all season. I think people close to that team have wondered about that relationship, DeAndre Hopkins and Osweiler, and the faith that some of Osweiler's receivers have in him. But they don't really have any choice now.
Right.
You know, Tom Savage got hurt, and when you won this game with Osweiler, you had to stick with him.
So to get over to the other game in the AFC this week, Pittsburgh at Kansas City, should be a good game. I think it's going to be a good game. But Kansas City is a team to me that's like they caused so many turnovers this year, and it's like that's how they were winning games. You don't really know is that how good that team is? Are they really a good team, or they just luck up and get a lot of turnovers and win games?
I think they are. I think if you look at these two teams, these are the two most balanced teams left, where you could really argue that that they're top 10 offenses and top 10 defenses, and Kansas City's maybe got the best special teams going. I've watched this Chiefs team enough. I know it's tough to count on turnovers, but this secondary with Peters and Barry and even Daniel Sorensen playing well at safety, man, going against Big Ben, who's thrown 7 picks in the last 4 weeks, I don't think it's an easy matchup. They're getting Justin Houston back, and they've got it. I know people don't get excited about Alex Smith, but you can get excited about Tyreek Hill, and you can get excited about Travis Kelce. And they have enough playmakers now, whether it's special teams, offense, or defense. I really like this Chiefs team. I you know, it's early in the week, but I'm thinking that they're going to pull this thing off.
It's early in the week, and we're going to hear all week about Roethlisberger and his foot. Right, Greg? I mean, that to me is a big red flag for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah, Mike Tomlin's going to hear a lot about it because why is he throwing passes on the second to last play of the game when they're up by whatever it was, you know, four scores? It's crazy. Ben, you know, we've been through this before. He'll be out there, I'm sure, in the end. And they have a good offensive line, so that helps. I mean, that's the crazy thing. I think he only got hit twice in that game, and that was one of the two times.
Greg, I want to ask you this. Is Jamaal Charles done in Kansas City? I believe he's done.
Yeah, he probably is. You know, they've gotten by so well the last 2 years without him. You know, you've probably been around. Sometimes it's tough when you have a franchise legend who's not healthy and he's kind of around, and you got to give him the ball when he's out there, and they just can't count on him. You know, Spencer Ware is, I think, in the top 10 in the league in terms of yards from scrimmage. Mm-hmm. Charkandrick West is a good backup. I mean, these guys aren't all pros or anything, but their running game really has not been an issue without him.
Last thing, Greg, did anything that happened over this past weekend change your perception of these playoffs and who might come out on top, who might wind up in the Super Bowl?
Well, I would never give up. I mean, I know I said it's going to be a tough road for Seattle, but this team, I mean, they've been to 6 divisional round games in 7 years, and they were the top-scoring defense for 4 straight years before this year. And, look, it's going to be really hard, but just seeing the performance that they had with the running game that they did, I just sort of never questioned this. I think they're the NFC's Patriots. And I always give them a fighting chance, and I kind of needed to see a game out of them to think that they could do it. And that's probably the one thing, just seeing them do that. I would never doubt this group with Michael Bennett and Avril and Wagner and Sherman and Chancellor and KJ Wright. I mean, these guys have been together so long. You guys have seen it in Buffalo, the continuity on a roster. Sometimes you don't need to have that high seed to make it all the way back to the Super Bowl. Sometimes these guys, they know how to play well together, and I would never count them out.
All right. Hey, Greg, thanks for this.
Yeah. Tested this week.
Thanks, Greg. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Greg Rosenthal, Around the NFL editor for NFL.com, host of the Around the NFL podcast. Greg joined us on the Subway Fresh Steak Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. I was surprised, and I think I'm echoing what Greg said. I was surprised that Seattle played so well and looked so strong. I expected Detroit to put up more of a fight. I expected Detroit to be able to score some points.
Yeah, we definitely expected that. Especially we talked about – obviously, we played there, right? So we've seen that defense firsthand. We've seen what this offense was able to do, even passing the ball against that defense. So you expected Matthew Stafford and those Detroit receivers to be able to get it done, or at least get moved the ball a little bit, and – they weren't really able to do anything. Maybe it's just like you said. Some teams, they've been playing together for so long, they know how to play together, especially once the playoffs come around. They're just a different team. I think the Packers are the same way.
And let's let's talk about these wild card games. And you asked Greg the question about the ill-fated boat trip for the Giants. Are you insinuating that was a factor? Because
I don't think it was a factor.
I don't think it was, but
obviously people are still talking about it.
Well, the idiot, tabloids in New York, you know, with the front page today with the, you know, come on, really?
Yeah, it was
there was one headline, the yachts all folks. And come on. Really? Beckham didn't play well, but I don't even want to hear people and the hockey guys before us were talking about how, I'd handle it differently, the biggest game of my life. No, you wouldn't. It's a day off.
Yeah.
You know, do what you want on a day off. These guys are millionaires, many of them. And if they want to go to Florida and be on a boat for a day, and you know, they weren't arrested. They didn't break any rules. They didn't miss any practice or meeting time.
Right.
What are we talking about here? Should Beckham have hung onto the ball? Absolutely should have hung onto the ball.
I think it's just like Greg said. He dropped a couple of them early in the game, and that pressure really got to him. And a guy like Odell Beckham, very emotional guy, he thinks that he has to do it all himself. And then once he drops a couple in the playoffs and he knows everybody's watching, that can really get to you, you know, and you never really rebound from that. And that's what it seems like happened. He never really rebounded from those couple of drops early in that game, and it just got worse.
And as talented as Beckham is, and I get it, and he will always be compared to Sammy, but that's part of the package with Odell Beckham, the inconsistency, the immaturity, you know, he flies off the handle, you know, a couple of years ago with the Carolina cornerback, right, with Josh Norman.
Josh Norman, yeah.
And the game yesterday, that comes with Odell Beckham. I'm not a big fan. I know he's supremely talented, but I'm not a huge fan.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that comes with that package, you know, and he's down in New York City, and he knows it. He knows that he is one of the premier players in this league, one of the faces of the franchise, or of the NFL, really. And so because of that, all of this fame, he travels the world, he does a lot of different things. But you gotta handle football first, right? And so yesterday on the field, he didn't handle football first. And once I'm telling you, once he dropped those couple of passes early in the game, he just never rebounded. I see receivers do it all the time.
Now, the AFC wildcard playoff games, and there's not much to say about Texans and Raiders. And as I watched that game, I watched the first half of that game and kind of gave up on it. I just had an overwhelming sense of sorrow for the Oakland Raiders, who lost their quarterback. They could not compete in that game because they had Connor Cook going. They lost their top two quarterbacks. I don't know if McGloin would have made much of a difference, but I just felt like, man, this is a pretty good Oakland team, but they lost the guy that I believe to be the most valuable player in the league this year.
I mean, Oakland was the team that earlier in the season everybody was saying, this is the team that can beat the Patriots in the AFC. This is probably the only team that can beat the Patriots. And then you just see how bad it got after he got hurt. It was just like a totally different team. Guys dropping passes. He's not able to connect on different things. Their running game's not the same. The defense was never really that good. They were just able to come back in games and win games, you know? So it was like they were lucky all year. I think they had like 6 or 7 comeback in the fourth quarter type of games, and their luck ran out, you know, and he got hurt, and that was it for him.
I got the team that can beat the Patriots. It's Pittsburgh, and I told you on what I thought on this show Friday. They rolled Miami. And I didn't realize till the game was going along yesterday that it was the first time ever that Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, and Le'Veon Bell all played together in a playoff game.
I didn't realize that.
That's like the best three you could put on the field in the NFL right now. I think they're not gonna roll Kansas City. Kansas City's very good defensively, great special teams, but I think the Steelers are playing great defense right now, and I think they will give the Patriots a game. I really believe this is a team on the rise in the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they demonstrated that against Miami.
Let me tell you, the matchup to watch this week, Antonio Brown, Marcus Peters, oh man, that is like a matchup of the ages. You're talking about two of the best players in this league, you know, one of the best corners in this league, and if arguably the best receiver in this league matching up. Probably, I don't know if Kansas City follows. I would think that they would follow with their best corner going against the number one wide receiver in this league. Man, that's a matchup to watch. It should be a good game. It really should be.
Dolphins were exposed for the frauds that they are, I think, and especially up front. You know, guys like Sue had nothing to offer, really, in yesterday's game.
I mean, come on. Le'Veon Bell is, you know, that. First of all, Pittsburgh's offensive line is good. You know, we've seen it here. Those guys, good. They really block well. And Pittsburgh really doesn't have to get the ball down the field. They can throw wide receiver screens, and there's nothing you can do with that as a defensive lineman because the ball is coming out so fast, I can't get to that. So they were always on their heels, not knowing what to do. And then you have Le'Veon Bell coming, and he's so patient and setting up his blocks, and the line blocks so well for him. There was nothing they could do with
that. Steelers are going to the Super Bowl, I believe.
You think so?
Yep. All right, Donald and I are going to come back. We're going to talk more about the wild card game, and we're going to talk about some of our unsung heroes from wild card weekend. Plus, we will revisit the Bills coaching search and get more input from you on that. So the phone lines will be open when we return at 803-0550 or from outside Buffalo, toll-free call 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show from One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Donald Jones here for another half hour talking about the wild card games, the upcoming games this weekend, and Bills coaching search. Our Twitter poll is on the Bills coaching search. We'd like you to weigh in on that. You have about 25 minutes left in that. The Bills have interviewed 4 so far for the head coaching vacancy over the first week or so of this search. And want to know from you, which of those 4 do you think is the best fit for the Buffalo Bills? Of the 4 that they've interviewed, we've got 1,200 votes in. 40% of you say current or last year's offense coordinator Anthony Lynn would be the best fit. 29% say Seattle defensive coordinator Chris Richard. 26% say Panthers defensive coordinator Sean McDermott. And 5% say Arizona offense coordinator Harold Goodwin. No word on any further coaches, but you're welcome to throw some names in the hat. Phone lines open, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Let us know what you think about that. As we said, no word on timetable, no word on whether those are the only 4 who will be discussed here at One Bills Drive. We're going to take another look back at the wild card game, Donald, ready for our Losi and Ganji unsung heroes of wild card weekend. These are the guys that maybe were under the radar going into the weekend and outperformed what we thought they would do. The unsung heroes, the Losi and Ganji unsung heroes from the weekend. You want me to go first?
Yeah, you go first.
Are you still coming up with yours? You know who you're?
I'm good, yeah.
I'm going with Thomas Rawls, running back for Seattle. Didn't see that coming. I know he's a talented player who kind of had an injury-filled 2015. I think he missed most of the 2015 season, but he was on fire. 107 yards in the first half, finished with 161 yards, leading Seattle to a 26-6 win over Detroit. I think Thomas Rawls running and good work by Seattle's offensive line put that game out of reach. Obviously, the Seattle defense did a great job, and we talked with Greg Rosenthal about that. But I've got Thomas Rawls, a guy who I didn't see coming, who had a huge game against the Lions, and I make him my unsung hero of Wild Card Weekend. What about you, Donald?
So I'm going to go with Randall Cobb. We all know when Randall Cobb came into the league, he burst on the scene with, like, crazy plays. They were lining him up at running back, lining him up at slot, outside. He was catching everything all over the field, rushing the ball and everything. And then he kind of died off over the years. They started to really try to get the ball to, you know, Cook and Adams, and Ty Montgomery out there gets a lot of running plays and passing plays. So Randall Cobb really hadn't been doing too much this year. And then yesterday he explodes back onto the scene. 5 receptions, 116 yards. He had the 42, I think his longest was 42 yards, 3 touchdowns. And you see that one on the people who are watching on the MSG side, the Hail Mary. I mean, that was a great play. How does that even
great
happen?
Throw.
Yeah, it was a great throw. And how does that happen? Like, the guy just standing. He didn't even have to jump for it. He just stood back there and caught it like a punt.
The network guys, who was it, Aikman and Joe Buck, immediately jumped on the Giants' defensive backs. Did they misplay that?
Yes, they did. They did.
I mean, the theory is you don't let a guy get behind you, but there's really no room behind Randall Cobb there, was there? How should the DBs have played that?
The DBs, well, first of all, you're right. You never let somebody get behind you. Like, don't let anybody get behind you.
So you've got to be out of bounds then if you're going to not let him get behind. That was on the final step of the back line there.
Yeah, at least be even with them, though. But you can't get caught up in there. And then all you got to do is, like, bat it down. A lot of guys get caught trying to catch it. And nobody – did you see how high they jumped? Like, they all jumped, like, an inch off the ground.
So you are finding fault with that. I think it was just a great throw. I give
Aaron
Rodgers –
it was a great throw and a great catch, but – that was bad, man. You're talking about DBs that have 40-inch verticals. They jump like 1 inch off the ground. They all miss the ball.
Yeah.
That's bad.
There's another play, a passing play from the weekend I want to talk to you about, and it comes from the Seattle-Detroit game, second quarter, and a touchdown throw from Russell Wilson to Richardson, Paul Richardson, in the end zone. How does the flag not get thrown on this play where Richardson clearly has his arm wrapped around his right arm, not his catch, a spectacular one-handed catch with his left hand. But his right hand is wrapped around the face mask of the defensive back. If that's not offensive pass interference, I don't know what it is.
That is definitely offensive pass interference. First of all, I just want to admire the dance moves he put on at the end of that.
Okay.
But, no, that's definitely offensive pass interference. I mean, his face mask, offense, however you want to call it, it's something on the wide receiver. But we all know in Seattle they don't get calls out there, man, especially in the playoffs. You're not going to get that call against that defense in the playoffs. It's not going to happen.
Well, then why bother having officials?
Because you are so right.
Seriously.
So right.
Just horrible missed call.
We see it every year. Games in Seattle, it's like, that is a horrible call.
Points and on the board because of that missed call.
Man, it's terrible.
I don't get it. 803-0550, the number. You can talk about the wild card games with us. You can talk about anything you'd like, the coaching search for the Bills. Give us a call, 803-0550, or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. John in South Buffalo has been waiting for a while. Hello, John. Go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing, John?
Good.
Talking to you. One guy I would like to see them interview, and I think he'd make a good coach, is Art Briles. Art Briles took a Baylor team that was really bad, and he made him a pretty good team. But because of what was on out there, he was let go. He has a good coaching. He had a good coaching staff. His son was offensive coordinator. And I'd like to know what you think about that.
Well, I think what went on out there is pretty serious stuff. First of all, that would be the first thing that I would point to, the allegations of sexual assault and cover-ups by the football department. I mean, almost disqualifying, I think, the way that was mishandled by Art Briles, isn't it?
Right.
John?
They let him go because I guess he didn't know what a lot of the players were doing, and they held him responsible.
I'll tell you this, John.
Son would make a good offensive coordinator along with him.
Okay.
So, John, I'll tell you this. As a recruit going into a different university, the head coach knows everything that goes on in that program. He really is the CEO of the program. They know every single thing that happens. Like, so when you hear these coaches say, I didn't know anything that was happening, that's totally false. You knew something was happening. You might not know the details of everything, but you knew something was happening. And it's not the point of did he know that it was happening or not. You know, he was a part of probably covering it up. And,
yeah.
You know, so those allegations right there, that's tough to bring in a head coach. Now, obviously, this is a different, you know, this would be in the NFL and not in college, so he wouldn't be dealing with, like, kids anymore. But I'm just not a fan of all the time the college coaches, no matter how good they are in college, coming up to the league. I just think it's a totally different ball game, and it's so much that you have to deal with up here. It's totally different than college.
Yeah.
And most of them, for me, don't pan out.
There's not a whole lot of – I mean, I'm sure someone can cite examples, but college football coaches who've had great success in the NFL, I don't think that's a very long list. And if you can set aside the allegations against Art Briles, they caused him to lose his job, which I don't believe you can. You also have this Baylor program that's sort of, you know, kind of a gimmick football thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't know that system would work in the NFL. It's pretty clear that it doesn't,
right,
based on some of the Baylor players who've come out, quarterbacks and especially offensive linemen, even receivers, I think. So I don't know. I don't think Art Briles is a qualified or credible candidate for a head coaching job here or anywhere else.
I don't know.
Quite frankly. All right, we'll take some other names, though, if you'd like to throw them in the hat. We have four names in for the coaching interviews for the Buffalo Bills today. Donald and I have talked about it all day with the weekend interviews of Harold Goodwin from Arizona, Chris Richard of the Seattle Seahawks, and the earlier interviews last week, of course, Anthony Lynn, Bills offensive coordinator most of this past year, and Sean McDermott from Carolina. Four interviews in, all of them youngish. I mean, Chris Richard would be the youngest at age 38. Anthony Lynn, 10 years apart from him. The others in the middle of that. So if you're looking for trends, the Bills, I guess, looking for a younger head coach, and we've been speculating on what that might mean in terms of relating to players. I don't know if there's any other trends. Two offense, two defense. Maybe that doesn't matter to Doug Whaley, absent any direction or any comments from Whaley on what he's looking for. And, you know, he hasn't spoken in a week and didn't talk much at all, wasn't asked much at all last week about what he was looking for in a head coach. And he hasn't had much to say about it, obviously, since. I don't know. It's an interesting field. I think it's, yeah. I think it shows, I'm not trying to make broad statements here, but I do think it does also show that Doug Whaley doesn't care about making a big splash hire, mm-mm, doesn't care about conventional wisdom. I think this is pointed out by a couple of callers, and we've talked about it. This is Doug Whaley's move, and it appears that he has in mind the type of coach he's looking for, and we'll find out what he settles on. But I don't think he cares about a big splash or perception, which is basically the way you want it to be conducted, I believe.
Yeah, I think when you look at, just like we talked about earlier, the entire pool of coaches right now, there aren't many big names out there, guys that are being interviewed, guys that want to take interviews. So you have this pool of guys that are young coaches. You know, they're mostly coordinators throughout the league. And so he's now looking at this pool. He has his guys. He doesn't care about what everybody else thinks. How come you don't have this guy coming in? How come you don't have this guy coming in? He wants who he feels is the best guy. And maybe Brownie is right. Maybe he does want that guy that he feels he can work side by side in everything, you know. And a younger guy is that guy. Instead of hiring, you know, a Tom Coughlin who's going to come in here and say, you know, I want total control. I want to do everything. I don't care, you know, give me the players that I need. He wants a guy that he can work directly with to rebuild this thing together. Maybe that is, you know, what he's looking for. So a younger guy is probably that guy.
803-0550, the number to call, toll free, 1-888-550-2550, or you can join us via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Let's take a couple of calls on this issue. Let's go to Chris in Tampa. Hello, Chris. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Really appreciate the show. You guys do a great job.
Thank you, Chris.
Quick question for you. If you guys were the GM of the Bills, would you guys re-sign Tyrod? And the reason I ask that is I'm kind of hoping they re-sign him. There was a really good article in the Buffalo News a few weeks ago that said Drew Brees in his first 2 years completed 59% of his passes for 5,700 yards, 31 TDs, 33 interceptions. Tyrod, 63% of his passes, over 6,000 yards, 37 TDs, 14 interceptions. I'd really be sick to my stomach if they give up on Tyrod, he goes somewhere else, and finally emerges into that great leader. And like I said, I'm hoping we re-sign him. We're just wondering what your position is. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Chris. My position would be, I want to hear Donald in a minute here. Yeah, I'd keep him around. You know, I'd pick up the option, keep him around. I don't think the I don't see a better option. That would be reason number one. Number two, I do think there are signs of progress with Tyrod Taylor, limited signs anyway. I would like to see how that plays out. Number three reason would be I don't think the contract terms are that onerous. I think you can handle the cap hit and the cash hit that we're required to keep him around. But that's my position. I don't know. It, you know, there is plenty of evidence to suggest the Bills want to look elsewhere, but I don't think that decision has been made yet. I know it hasn't been.
Yeah, I mean, the decision obviously has not been made yet. But for me, I'd like to see him on this roster for those reasons and for just the fact of having a guy on the roster that can help groom someone else if, you know, someone else is going to be your real franchise guy moving forward. I think Tyrod Taylor is a capable guy. I think I don't know how much room he has to grow. I really don't. I think if you're going to have him on this roster, you need to really invest in wide receivers. Make sure you have depth at the wide receiver position because I don't think he's that guy that can lift the play of average or lesser average type of wide receiver. So you need good wide receivers on the field for him to work with. But at the same time, I don't think there's anybody else out there that's better than him right now that's going to come through the draft or in free agency. So you might as well keep him there.
Back to the coaching search, a tweet from Scott L. He says, come on, John. At the end of the day, the extensive and exhaustive coach search is all a mirage. Anthony Lynn will be named. Anthony Lynn might get the job here. He might, but it's not a mirage. I believe it's a real search, and they've invested a week and may have more time to invest in it as well. That's the problem. If you name Anthony Lynn, the immediate knee-jerk reaction will be, oh, well, of course, he was the guy all along. I don't think so. I think it's I think it's a good faith effort. What are you laughing about?
I mean, we
knee-jerk?
It's going to be – you know, if he's
you
named
can't
the
win
head
if
coach,
you name him the head coach. It's like ah, same old Bills. Blah, blah,
so
blah,
the best
blah,
thing
blah,
for
blah, blah,
for
blah.
the best thing for Doug is like you said,
do what
he
wants.
Care. Do what he wants.
Yeah,
do
I think he will.
Do.
Yeah, let's see if we can squeeze in one more call. Bob in Niagara Falls, go ahead, Bob. Welcome. You're on the show.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Just curious. Frank Reich's name was thrown out there, and I haven't heard another word about that.
Yeah, it wasn't thrown out by anybody in position to do anything about it. We talked about that at the top of the show. I don't know if it's curious or not. You know, they interviewed Frank Reich a couple of years ago when they hired Rex Ryan, pretty much the same crew interviewed him, right, the Pegulas and Doug Whaley. And he is not among the four interviews yet. I don't know that he's going to get an interview. He certainly has been available this past week for an interview and didn't happen, so it doesn't appear he's on their short list. What does that say? I don't know. What do you think it says? Oh, he's gone. What do you think it says?
How many times does a team, if they interview somebody and they don't like them, will they bring them back 2 years later and interview them again? You know, I mean, you can read it. If they liked them back then, they would have hired him as a head coach.
Yeah. And, you know, Frank has since moved on from San Diego to Philadelphia. And, look, there's no disputing the fact that Frank Reich is one of the all-time franchise heroes, one of the all-time great guys. I consider him a not a good friend, but a friend anyway. And but it just doesn't appear that they're interested in him. And again, we're looking at Doug Whaley taking control of this coaching search and not really caring about perception, the sentimental favorites, the hot coaching names, of which there are very few this year. This is going to be a very interesting decision.
Just to get back to that catch, Randall Cobb, the Hail Mary catch, Marlon Kerner texted me, like a DB would, and he said the receiver pushed off, which Randall Cobb did push off there. So maybe that's why those guys weren't able to jump like they should. But he
did
push
off.
Yeah.
Now, I would agree. You're not going to get that call on that play. I don't know about the Richardson play.
That's
blatant. You're not going to get a push off in the end zone on a Hail Mary very often.
Unless it's like you push.
Yeah, it was a nice push off.
It was skilled.
And that there's such a thing as that. And
it is.
Marlon probably doesn't want to hear that, but it's
true.
He
doesn't. Yeah. I'm sure he doesn't.
We're going to break. We're going to come back with more of the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
It's presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and a home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. What have we learned? Well, we talked with Dane Brugler, from NFL Draft Scout and CBSSports.com about tonight's national championship game, Clemson against Alabama. We asked Dane if it's true if there are 8 or maybe even 10 potential first-round draft picks on the field in tonight's national championship game.
I mean, there's a reason these two teams are looked at as probably the two most talented in the nation, and you know they deserve a spot in the national title game. I mean, you look just at Alabama, you know, starting on that defense of Jonathan Allen, a player who will be in consideration for the number one overall pick. You have guys like Tim Williams, the pass rusher, coming off the edge, a guy that can really put heat on the pocket. In the secondary with Marlon Humphrey, a big physical corner, and then at middle linebacker, Reuben Foster, went over 100 tackles this year. Then you look at Clemson, the top player on their offense is probably Mike Williams, the wide receiver, a guy who's built really well for the position. He's fast. There's a lot of talent on this field tonight. NFL teams will definitely be tuning into this one.
I'm going to be tuning into that one, Donald. That's among the things we learned today on the show. And I like the playoff structure in college football. I like the national championship game in particular. I think it's going to be fun tonight.
I like the playoff structure as well. I think you can add a couple teams to that playoff structure because there are still teams that get left out, like a Penn State that probably should have been in the playoffs this year. But the two teams that are in it tonight, it's a great matchup. It's a rematch. I'm sure Clemson is going to come out on fire trying to, you know, get their revenge from last year.
What do you think we'll talk about tomorrow in terms of the coaching search? More candidates? Doubtful.
Doubt it.
Decision? Doubtful.
Doubt it. We're going to be talking about this game tonight.
Talking about this game, yeah. I think something's going to break in the next day or two with the coaching search. I really do.
I hope so.
Me too.
Want to know.
Yeah, and we want to hear more from you when we reconvene tomorrow to talk about the Bill search for head coach.
I forgot to ask Greg about that Twitter picture, man, that avatar with the cats.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to know too much about that. Hey, thanks very much for tuning in. We're back tomorrow at noon. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned and locally operated since 1933. Like NOCO on Facebook for great deals, specials, and more. Ryan Gates is our intercom board op. Production assistants from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltenek, Thomas Hollander, James Donovan, our producer, Jay Harris. We'll see you tomorrow at noon with the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.